go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here, it's a minute past the hour on this, the 22nd day of August, 2012. We're at the middle of the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You know, it only took about a decade and a half, but we finally, I think, have you noticed we stopped saying www? Yeah. Maybe there's hope for being able to set the timer on the DVR yet. No, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is the home of The Horn. It is there that you can most easily access the stream itself, for we are streamed on the Internet and are not to be found on your government-censored radio. We're available on a wide variety of platforms, TuneIn Radio being one of them, Stitcher Internet Radio being another, Tuner Internet Radio being a third, and we're still trying to sort out the dilemma regarding iTunes Radio. Who knows? I mean, it's just, well, reaching human beings there is never easy. But I'm sure at some point we'll get a report back from Patty and from Marty. And maybe we'll understand. Maybe we'll have some understanding of why we apparently disappeared there. Folks popping into the chat room. Hey, Jug of Punch. Howdy, Sal. Moderator Sparky's already there. I'm there. The room will fill up as the program continues. It's a lovely afternoon here at midweek in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. You know, it's possible to drive through this state and say, my, what a lovely, unspoiled wilderness this state is. And then you actually see the truth of the matter. And I've got a story about that this evening and a question to ask. Hopefully. Sometimes things don't work out quite the way I plan them because our conversation goes in different directions. But that's okay. Because this, y'all are the barometer of what matters. In terms of the discussion that we have here. For instance, for the third day in a row, we have more Todd Akin stuff, and some of it's really ultra super duper creepy, like the first 2 days of Todd Akin stuff weren't. But, and we'll get to it. And if there's any value in this, I suppose it lies in the fact that we are expanding the American dialogue about what the crime of violence that we refer to as rape really means. It is not a crime of passion. It is not a crime of sex. It is a crime of immense and intense and abiding and life-scarring violence. But lo and behold, that word forcible is finding its way into the American, oh yeah, forcible rape, sure, I understand. They are devious bastards, these right-wingers. They truly, truly are. And we will, presumably, get to all of that. But don't think for a minute what do you mean, y'all, who are you, Joe Biden, Marty? I'm a Southern boy. We say y'all. And it's not Y-A-W-L. It is Y-apostrophe-A-L-L. You all. It is a way of dealing with the second person plural in English, which doesn't, you know. In French, you have qui and vous. In German, you have du und sie. In English, you've got you and you. Thanks for all the help. Y'all. Just like in Pittsburgh, they say, yous guys. Or you move over a little westward and you start running into the land of yuns. Or is it backwards? Is it yuns in Pittsburgh? Yeah, it's yuns in Pittsburgh and yous as you move west into the Midwest. Yous guys? Yeah, because in Pittsburgh, it's yuns want to go down to Eaton Park and get some gravy fries? Oh, well, okay. Yeah, okay, that's what your reference was, Marty. I get it. You're taking that too seriously. Remember the reaction Biden got for y'all? Yeah. But I'm entitled. I grew up and that's y'all is part of my first language. Oh, goodness. But don't think for an instant that I don't know what today is. For we have reached, yea, verily, and we didn't have one of these last week, so we absolutely must this week. We have reached midweek. We have, in fact, reached hump day. We are henceforward rolling downhill toward the weekend, downhill toward Friday. For yes, yes indeed, it's Wednesday. And here in this little faith community known as the Head On Radio Network family, the Horn family, Wednesdays mean that we pause and reflect. Because that's right, Wednesday is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, brethren and sistren. Hallelujah, absolutely. And so we will get prayer meeting underway here shortly. The deacons are moving amongst you now. They are on their way with the little plate, sort of bronze plated plates with the thin veneer of red velvet in the bottom so that the tinkling coins don't make too jingly a sound while the choirs are singing. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and by golly, we're getting pretty close. We actually have a realistic shot at ending the month of August, having met our fundraising goal, and thereby beating the Swede, Scott from Sweden, who has a standing offer of an extra $100 anytime we manage to meet the fundraising goal for the month. The Beat the Swede challenge looks doable this month. We're about 5,000. We are about $765 away from meeting the Beat the Swede challenge. And we've got until the 31st to pull that off. Wouldn't it be fun to do a couple of nights of shows and just absolutely nothing be said about fundraising? That's what happens if we reach the goal before the 31st and the Beat the Swede challenge is met. That's what happens. So as the deacons walk amongst you and pass the plate at the end of every aisle, just remember, look for that little PayPal button at the bottom of the plate. Press it. Or you can go to headonradionetwork.com. The tab is contribute and look for the snail mail address. They all go into the same pot. Just remember, if you're using the snail mail address, do not make checks payable to Bob Kincaid. I don't get the money. And make them payable to the Horn or Head On Radio Network, even better. That way, when Boss Man Wayne sees them, he doesn't get funny looks from the folks down there to the credit union when he deposits them for bill paying purposes. Okie dokie. Good deal. So, yes, indeed, The deacons have been shooed out of the parking lot where they were smoking with the sinners. They've been herded in through the vestibule past that 20-year-old bowl of stale and dust-covered butter mints. And they're on the way down the aisle with the little plates. And with that, I think it's time we bring the minister of music forward to get this prayer meeting Wednesday started right here on the horn. Brother, if you would please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Mares, you dotes, and dozy dotes, and little lambs, you divey, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you? I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, into the Cathedral of Common Sense. I am Archpope, Superior, Rabbi Supreme, Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonistic Agnostic, Bob Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. We've all come upstairs from a delicious fellowship supper, and it's going to take a little work to get folks woke, to make sure folks stay nice and awakey for this, because I tell you what, Lottie was there, I know, because he complimented the little old blue-haired lady's three-bean salad. And absolutely magnificent three-bean salad it is, although it can have some less than salutary effects, Glory! In the midst of Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and we'll ask folks feeling those effects to step out into the vestibule if they do not mind. Yes, indeedy, come on down that blood-red aisle and fall on your knees, brethren and sisters, in front of the altar and lay your hands, I mean lay them good, upon that subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you. Oh, a-flowing, a-flowing, a-flowing. Goodness gracious, we have such a prayer meeting scheduled and planned for this evening. We have the saints out there, and I'm not talking about the New Orleans Saints. We have the saints out there on eternal vigilant guard against the number of the beast, brethren and sisters, and the number of the beast. For remember, none who take the number of the beast shall be counted among the elect saved when Jesus starts to gutting people like folks gig frogs in the end times. Yes, we do, brethren and sisters. What do I mean? Well, we have to go to one of America's most sacred states. We have to go to Louisiana. Yes, hallelujah, glory. They are on guard there. For one never knows where the number of the beast will show up. And you know how it is that old Asmodeus, that cloven-hoofed devil that he is, he goes after the little ones, doesn't he? Oh, he surely does. He surely does. And he's going after the little ones in Louisiana at them government schools. Yes, indeedy. We will rely, brethren and sistren, we will rely upon a report from KPLC. Listen and shudder as you hear how little children are being converted to the ways of ancient evil.
Personal. The local elementary school is trying to implement a new program in its cafeteria, but the palm vein scanner is being met with opposition from parents. KPLC Polly Carter brings us details.
I was very, very mad, disappointed.
Many parents felt that way Monday after reading a letter sent home with their children from Moss Bluff Elementary School. The letter introduced a new program, the palm vein scanner, much like this one, to move students through the lunch line at a faster rate. With almost 1,000 students, Principal Charles Calderera says the system will reduce errors.
We're so large, and with an elementary school, they all come through the line, and most of them eat here.
You see how the devil operates? He's got a principal there whose name is very clearly near unto being like that of Cauldron, and we all know who uses cauldrons, don't we? Yes, he's recruiting children for the devil.
And most of them eat here, so it will make us more efficient and more accurate. We've had parents complain in the past because they felt like their children weren't eating, that we assigned them a charge for the day, and they might have been right.
Calderera says the school is acting on recommendation from school food service director Patricia Hoseman, but he says the letter gives parents an option.
We sent this letter home for parents to be aware of it and to let them know that they can opt out. They can opt out and say, hey, I don't want my child involved in it. And that's quite all right. And it won't make any difference. The children will still be able to eat in the cafeteria.
Sonia says she's against the palm vein scanner because of her beliefs.
As a Christian, I've read the Bible and, you know, go to church and stuff. And, you know, I know where it's going to end up coming to. And
as a Christian, I've read the Bible and I go to church and stuff. And the Lord looked unto the disciples, and he said unto them, lest ye be aware and wise in the ways of the stuff, ye cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Oh, she's angry, this mama. She's very angry. That's unfair. Let's get back to angry mama.
That's quite all right. And it won't make any difference.
Now, wait a minute. Before we get to the angry mama, can I just say this, please? Is there any country in which, and this is a caveat, is there any country in which people do not practice their religion with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other? Thank you, Lottie. I'm forever in your debt for that line. Where this would be an issue? I mean, is there an uprising of, would there be an uprising of parents at palm vein scanners in, say, Switzerland? Would there be an uprising against palm vein scanners in Japan? Australia? Canada? Now, I could imagine there would be an uprising against palm vein scanners in, say, Brazil. Of course, acknowledging that Brazil is probably going to wind up being the United States of the 21st century, looking at the way that... But no, there's still a lot of religion and superstition and exorcisms and demons and stuff. Yeah. Maybe the Dominican Republic. After all, they recently, there in the Dominican Republic, they let a little girl, well, young woman, die a teenager, because she was pregnant, and the Dominican Republic has exactly what the Republican Party would like to have, a full-out, no kidding, no two ways about it, ban on abortion. So a young woman, a 16-year-old, a girl, was diagnosed with leukemia. She also, somewhere along the way, and for reasons that science understands but Republicans don't, became pregnant. Because the Dominican Republic loves Jesus and lives in mortal terror of a church that is infested with pedophile priests, because the Dominican Republic's government loves that church and its pedophile priests more than it loves its little girls, the 16-year-old girl is dead. She is dead because the doctors withheld her chemotherapy for a treatable, curable form of leukemia because it might induce an abortion. So now, the little girl and the little baby are dead. And so I would expect a place like the Dominican Republic to get kind of squirrely about a palm vein scanner. But in a country where, well, there you have it. The Republicans are winning. The conservatives, with their family values, are winning. Because that's headed for America. That's what they want. They want the needs of, you know, cancer patients for chemo to take a backseat to protecting the personhood of a fetus. So, in Louisiana, if you want to more efficiently serve meals to students at lunchtime, if you want the students to have more time to actually eat the meal than stand in line, and you bring in an efficiency measure like a palm vein scanner, just put your hand down, move on. No, this really is America. You have to send an opt-out letter to the Fundy parents. Oh, dear Mr. and Mrs. Fundamentalist, we are instituting a process here where at lunchtime children will be noted for their lunch charges by use of a palm vein scanner, which will note the unique structure of the veins in the palm of your child and differentiate them from all the other children, thereby making sure that you are not overcharged or anyone undercharged, that you are accurately charged for the lunch assumed by your child. This palm vein scanner is based on technology and science. But, dear Mr. and Mrs. Fundamentalist, because we recognize that you are dumber than dumber than pickle juice, we're sending this letter home so that you can opt out and make sure that your child stands in line longer and may be overcharged for lunches, because we know that you're afraid that we're satanic here at Gerald Ford Elementary School and are trying to enlist your children in the service of the dark arts. Those of you of age similar to me and older, I don't know about younger. I don't know what kind of optimism comes with being, you know, a 30-something now. But if you're around my age, and I'm 49, or if you're older, and you saw the advent of the space age and the and the moon program, and the belief that, in American exceptionalism that said, yeah, we really can do anything we set our minds to, and we have the scientists, and we have the will, and we're going to do this. Do you share my sense of dismay at the knowledge that in 2012, when we should have already had a mission to the mission to Mars, well, I mean, we've had a couple, you know what I mean, you know, footprints on Mars. Do you share my dismay at realizing we're not going forward into some sort of brave new future, brave new world, but a bold future where no human has gone before? Q. William Shatner. You realize we're not going there? The bus has not left, Reverbo. We're still sitting there idling, waiting for Mr. and Mrs. Fundamentalist to decide whether or not they're going to burn their child at the stake if they happen to mistakenly use the palm vein scanner. Do you share that sense of dismay? That sense of, aw, damn it! That feeling that somewhere along the way, promises were broken. How do you get from being the country that landed human beings on the moon to being the country where principals have to send opt-out letters to make sure that fundamentalists won't be offended by the use of goddamn technology in the schools that help children have more time to eat lunch?
Difference that children will still be able to eat in the cafeteria.
Sonia says she's against the palm vein scanner because of her beliefs.
As a Christian, I've read the Bible and, you know, go to church and stuff, and, you know, I know where it's going to end up coming to, and the mark of the beast, and I'm not going to let my kids have that.
Calderero says a lot of parents agree with her, but he says it's just technology.
I think a lot of this has to do with religious beliefs. Some people...
No, principal, say it. It's okay. A lot of this has to do with ignorance and superstition. Because there's not a damn thing in their holy book about palm vein scanners. I mean, would it make any difference if you called the PTA together and took a palm vein scanner and set it up on stage and said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take this apart and we're going to show you that there's no 666 tattoo device in it. Unscannable! Would it make a difference then? No! Because this is not grounded in knowledge. This is not grounded in reason. This is not grounded in brains. This is grounded in what religion does best, the installation of fear. The grafting of terror onto an innocent human spirit. The fact that this principal even thought, you know what, before we do this, we're going to have... Because it's in the Confederacy. It's in Louisiana Stan. It's in Jesus land. And the principal knew before he ever plugged in the first one that he was going to have to send a letter out, because otherwise they would surround his house with pitchforks and torches and probably try to kill him. Because they follow the Prince of Peace. Great googly moogly! Okay, Phase 5. Hey, cool. Phase 5's in the chat room. Good to see you, brother. Simple solution. Get a priest, reverend, rabbi to bless it or drive out the evil spirits or whatever. But see... You know, in that case, the reverend might be a hard-shell Baptist and not a soft-shell Baptist, or might be a premillennialist or not a postmillennialist, which means he's going to hell anyway, and the demons would just sit there and snicker and continue to, I don't know, pitch pennies in it. Yeah, we're going to get them children.
F me running!
Yeah, see, Texas Betsy gets it. What if it's the wrong priest? Geez, what if it's a Reformed rabbi and not an Orthodox rabbi? What if it's a Sufi imam and not a Sunni or a Shiite imam? Well, shit, we'll just have to have a war! I mean, I don't like to make grunty animal noises on the radio. But, I mean, I'm getting in touch with my inner silverback gorilla self. I just want to beat on the table with the backs of my hands. And this is the same thing as Todd Akin talking about legitimate rape. It is the same, it comes from the same bigoted, benighted, ignorant place. Damn. Yeah, Marty's right. Oh, wait till Alex Jones gets hold of this, if he hasn't already.
The Obama administration will use the biometric data from the palm vein scanner to recruit their army of little Obama bots. And the ones who refuse, they'll be sent to the Obama FEMA re-education camps.
You know, because Alex Jones has a voice that's a little bit like Selma Diamond's from Night Court. I could smoke 8 packs of cigarettes a day and still not sound as god-awful as Alex Jones.
See? Animal noises. And we're not even done with the piece here. Let's just finish it off and hope it doesn't finish me off.
We'll feel something with the Bible, Mark of the Beast. It's technology that's used throughout our lives everywhere.
He says the system isn't on campus yet, so students' palms won't be scanned anytime soon. But Sonia says if the program comes to campus, her children aren't participating and won't be around it either.
I'll probably pull them out of that school and transfer them to another school.
Really?
Yeah.
At your service in Moss Bluff, Holly Carter, KPLC 7 News.
See, there's a journalism lesson here, too. Holly Carter of KPLC News 7 Lake Charles, Louisiana, offers these. You heard the piece. Yeah, I interrupted it a couple of times, but you heard the piece. She offers this as two competing but equally valid arguments. The side that says we're going to use this as a means of maximizing efficiency and making sure that children get through the lunch line more quickly and aren't sitting there gobbling their food, because science has shown that little children who gobble their food puke it up later, and they have to send Mr. Wiggins, the janitor, to mop up the puke in the fourth grade room. And on the other side, you've got Ms. Saunier, who's going to pull her cheerins out of the school and take them to somewhere where there ain't no demons. This is a journalism failure. The way you present this story is weirdo religious fundamentalist fanatic willing to sacrifice child's education because she's afraid of sorcery. That's how you do the story. This false equivalency, this idea that there are two sides to every story, is poisoning us. Because there's not a damn thing inside that story to suggest that Ms. Sonye might be batshit crazy. Which she is. And, you know, her name's Sonnier, S-O-N-N-I-E-R. That
sounds French. Well, in Louisiana, that's okay.
Jack, in Shreveport, who should know from who knows from such people, said, "And heretofore, because y'all is poor, your child's palm print will be kept on record for the rest of his or her life as what would be a de facto criminal record." You know, I could object to the palm vein scanner on that basis, but not on the basis of demons. Is there anywhere besides this program and Rick Smith's and Malloy's and a few others that will call these freaks out for what they are? Now, the principal said, you know, we're not going to deny food to anybody or anything. Of course not! But at what point in time does this kind of mumbo-jumbo rise to a recognizable level of child abuse? At what point in time does religious tolerance have to give way to... Because if mama there is willing to do this over a simple piece of biometric technology, what the F else is she pouring into her poor children's or child's head? Now, honey, before you fall asleep tonight, pray extra careful that God doesn't strike you dead in the middle of the night with some ghoulish demon or send an incubus or a succubus to have sexual congress with you. If you're lucky and God loves you, you'll wake up whole and entire. Because God loves you. I conjured Reverbo. "Let's see," says Reverbo. "What's left?" "All the airships have left. The last bus pulled out this morning. Not even a bicycle. Wait. There's a mule and an old cart. Maybe they can catch that." "Well, damn, we forgot to leave them a map." Of course, we don't want them to have a map. Marty asking, "Oh, they're not blaming Harry Potter, are they?" I'm sure they've had their Harry Potter problems in the past. And no, Marty, in answer to your question, that's a white woman, Ms. Sonye. That's a white woman. Because religious stupidity is as deeply ingrained in ignorant white folks. I mean, I've read the Bible and go to church and stuff. I mean, what is the... I really do. I want to know what the stuff part is. Is that the Holy Communion? Is that being in the softball league? Kind of at a loss. Yeah, Jim noting, "I've had to use palm and retinal scans for security measures in my job with the military." And yet, Jim, somehow I don't think that you are worried about the salvation of your soul. Because the religion that you were raised in doesn't ask people to believe out of fear and out of hope for some sort of cosmic post-death payoff.
Then again, it is Louisiana, as noted by a number of you, including Irish Dave. The governor of Louisiana is, of course, Piyush Jindal, who, as a young man, participated in the exorcism of a woman, you know, as a physical assault. And there is a difference between physical. It's not like using legitimate or forcible physical assault. Actually, it rose to the level, probably rose to the level of battery if you want to get serious about the criminal code. So maybe he could put Ms. Saunier's mind at rest by going and exercising the palm vein scanner. I'm already tendering an apology. I must apologize to all the women of color out there that I've insulted by assuming that that ignorant fundy was not a white lady. She's white, folks. Dear God. This just gives me the... Stories like this give me the creeps because I recognize that, yes, it's an isolated story, but it is not an isolated phenomenon. I mean, if you walked into Sunday services and just took a poll at the First Apostolic Holiness Tabernacle and Herpetological Seminary this Sunday and asked folks if they'd let their little cheerins put their palms on one of them demon devices, you'd probably be near 100% of the fundies saying, "Well, no, because I don't want them to get gigged like a frog by Jesus when he sends all the unbelievers to the lake of fire that was prepared for the devil and his angels." I done read the Left Behind series, and I don't want them getting gunned down by the faithful when the tribulations come. Jack noting, I had not even heard this stuff. Although I do somewhat of a diligent job of keeping track of news tweets in Louisiana, I had not heard about this story, much less the bat crap crazy clips and quotes you included. Yikes! Man, Jack, you may be in Shreveport, but, I mean, come on, Shreveport, Lafayette, New Orleans, Baton Rouge. Remember those sovereign citizens who gunned down those deputies? That's another Louisiana story. And Jack noting, yeah, she totally sounded like crazy white folks to me. This is a harbinger of doom for this country. It really is. Oh, by the way, I mentioned the Beat the Sweet challenge earlier, and Darlene, who is a stalwart supporter of the Horn, wrote in and said, "Come on, Horn listeners, let's beat the Swede." She says, "I'll match up to $100 in donations so you can take a $200 bite out of that $750 or so needed to beat the Swede." So there it is. It's on the table. 2 hours and 15 minutes to make it. Your 10 turns into 20. Your 5 into 10. Your 20 into 40. 15 will get you 20. Home in the country. A river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. Beer? Beer. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you kindly. $100 challenge on the table to get us close to finishing August in the black. Oh, there's ever so much out there this evening. Nice little crowd forming in the chat room. Jump on in if you care to. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. Registration is free and easy. Help yourself. It really is a nice little adjunct to the program itself. I think you'd enjoy it. Phase 5. I wonder if these people realize their Bibles are printed by machines. Don't start. Don't get them a thinking with that lizard brain of theirs. It never comes to anything good. and thus it seems it has always been, and the question remains, must it always be? 15 minutes before the hour, and the lines are open. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, hey, David, what's up?
Not much. I'm just listening to, I see there's a spinoff of the I've Got Nothing Institute. Now it's the I've Got Nothing Ministries.
Yeah, there you go.
They're zooming fast around the world. You know, they do have...
If they go around the world much faster, they're going to time travel. I mean, we've all seen the episodes, right?
The one point that they have is that that people should be wary of is all the data and information that they collect, and they hand it to corporations for kids regarding their diet habits. But that would be the only thing, not evil technology and the works of demons and sorcery, as you say.
No, I mean, let's be straight about this, David. There's plenty to worry about inside the school lunch system. I mean,
right.
For Christ's sakes, a palm vein scanner or no palm vein scanner, Representative Todd Akin, who wants to be Senator Todd Akin, wants to eliminate the school lunch program altogether. And then there's the fact that the school lunch program does have profound problems simply because the school lunch program serves downer cattle products to school children. I mean, that story has stayed with me from the time that we talked about it, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years ago? I don't know. But you remember the story of the downer cattle?
Right.
And how it turned out that, well, no, they ain't got the mad cow or nothing. We chop them up into really tiny pieces, even if they're sicker than shit when they die. I mean, if they can't stand up, we just pick them up with a forklift, and we strip the hide off of them, cut out all the little hunks of meat. And we cook it into Dendy Moore chili, and we make it into the pepperoni, and we serve it in the school lunch program. I mean, I remember I actually wrote to my congressman over it. And it is a real problem, the quality of food that we serve inside our school systems.
Mm.
But the problem is not, the problem is along those lines, and along the lines of people, what do you want to bet that if you were to go and try to find Miss Sonia, she'd say, well, yeah, I know. I mean, them girls, they go out on a Saturday night, and they get to drinking, and the next thing you know, they on the pool table with their legs spread, and they holler and rape the next morning. I know what he's talking about with legitimate rape. It's Louisiana. Don't you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon that a lot of that stuff is, it all connects and parallels to each other in different ways. There is the serious problem is it just keeps coming back over and over again regarding religion and fundamentalists, and it goes back to what I said about it's time to make these organizations pay their taxes. And then if people did threaten the churches that way, it'll never happen, of course, but if they did, you would see them instantly go away from the schools and go back to rock music as Satan campaigns.
I differ with you because it would be proof that Obama hates Christianity. Because they're working that one hard right now.
Yeah. I think that it's a tough one for a lot of reasoning because of how easy religion makes it for people to make sense of their life in chaotic times, even if it's batshit crazy.
But how can you call that sense? I mean, there is an essential human urge to understand our world, and that can be seen in everything from the first human burials to fertility figurines to the invention of various and sundry calendars, and these are all attempts to understand our world. But in the 21st century, if your attempt to understand your world includes the belief that the devil is going to get your child because little Johnny got his palm scanned so he could get his downer cattle pepperoni pizza, well, I'd say you're not getting anywhere with that whole understanding your world thing.
I think the biggest problem, though, Bob, is the fact is it goes back to the days of ancient tribes where you would seek out a wise elder. There are no more wise elders in the, or maybe there weren't to begin with, in the religious organizations. And they seek out these people on TBN, the PAX channel, all these different ministries, these mega churches, which really they're just mega fundamentalist malls. They're not really churches. They just want you to buy things.
Well, yeah, I remember the church that that got in tax trouble in, I think, somewhere around Nashville because they were, I forget if they were opening a coffee shop. No, maybe they were opening a, it was a gym. And they were going into direct competition with a for-profit gym, and they were demanding that their gym, and they were going to charge, you know, memberships just like the other gym, like, say, Gold's Gym or Curves or any of those things. But this was Jesus' gym. And they were going to charge memberships and everything, but they were going to do it tax-free. And the for-profit gyms were going, wait an effing minute. What are you giving communion while people are on the elliptical?
Someone was mentioning on the TV, they were talking about how they would get people to send in your, as they call them, their love gifts. And it was so shameless what they would do. They would say, I know you don't have any money, but you're going to be blessed. Like, they've gotten to that level.
I'm going to send you my sweaty prayer hanky. You know, I like to think that the Horn family has enough dignity that they don't want a sweaty prayer hanky.
Karma's coming your way. No, I mean, it was so shameless what they were talking about. It was amazing. I mean, when times are, that's the problem with the whole fundamentalist empire, is that there is no level what they will get for that penny out of your savings. They want it. It goes back to...
And they're going to have
it. All.
They want it all. Right down to the uterus. They want it all.
And it makes you wonder, though, because if you look at on the other side, the Muslims, they never went down that road of the mega churches. They never went down that road of going on national TV asking for love gifts. Now, maybe certain sects and certain areas of really, really obscure branches, but Christians out in the open... They've become the ultimate business that you just can't mess with.
And I mean, that's the truth. And that's why from time to time I remind people that the First Amendment is no longer anything more than a life support system for the religion industry. The First Amendment is an excuse for anything the religion industry cares to do.
And you know, Bob, that's part of the problem. They can get away with anything. They literally can get away with anything because their followers, their eyes are so glazed over. I bet you there's some Scientologists in California just kicking the chair going, God damn it, do you see what those Christians are doing?
Yeah, we gotta work. Hey, get Cruz and Travolta over here. We got to work on the hustle.
You know,
my internet connection will probably die now. I said something about Scientology.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, about that whole, I was telling you about that whole thing regarding Tom Cruise and how Paul Thomas Anderson had to go through the channels of Scientology. Imagine having to screen your film, even though you didn't say one word of Scientology, and the person you have to go with is an estranged friend. Your friend Tom Cruise, who you did a movie for him in '99, and he got so riled up into Scientology the past decade that he doesn't want anything to do with you. So you sit there, and I just want people to keep in mind, the Tom Cruise thing isn't a joke. He's number two in charge of Caveat Hits the Dirt.
Jesus. Well, and hey, you are the pop culture correspondent, so
yeah.
Let me bring this one up and see if maybe, because it's not very often I get to stuff before you do, but I think I may have you on this one. You saw the news of the suicide of Tony Scott, right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And you bringing up Tom Cruise made me think of Days of Thunder and Top Thunder and Thunder Gun and those Tom Cruise movies he directed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a sad situation, but I'm
I'm not one of those who says that every person who commits suicide is crazy. I think that sometimes suicide can be a rational act. And apparently it was in the case of Tony Scott because he had been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. So he said, you know, check out. You know.
Now, has that been... Now, there's some...
I don't know. CBS LA was reporting that. So
yeah.
That's the last I saw. But anyway, do you know what project he was presently working on when he killed himself?
Oh, boy. Which project was this?
Have I really got you?
Yeah, you got me on this one.
I'm setting aside a toaster, even though I didn't say anything good. I'm setting aside a toaster.
Toaster, write out a check for yourself.
He was working on the film version of Bill O'Reilly's book about the assassination of Lincoln. You know, the one that has the made-up stuff about the assassination of Lincoln.
you know what's funny about
I'm not O'Reilly. Talking about Abraham Lincoln's the vampire slayer.
You know, that guy is crazier than, as you say, a sprayed roach. You're going to have to trademark that and patent it.
Well, if it was original, I would, but I stole that. That was what way back when the right-wing fundamentalist governor of Alabama wanted to raise property taxes on the rich in Alabama, the rest of the Republican Party turned on him and said that he was crazier than a sprayed roach, and I've hung on to that like a dog with an old bone.
Well, Bob, you're not thinking the American entrepreneur way. All you have to do is concatenize it. So you just say, y'all are crazier than a sprayed roach.
Jesus. But no, he was working. I remember doing the story about it at some point in time. You know, they all run together. But that Bill O'Reilly Lincoln assassination book was just, I mean, it had everything but Martians in it. It was that historically inaccurate. And Tony Scott, that was the project he was apparently working on.
You know, I...
Kind of puts it in a different context and perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it does. And, you know, the thing that's funny about Bill O'Reilly, and it's never brought up enough, but it should be, is that his novel shows you how crazy as a sprayed roach he is. It's about a TV show host who goes completely crazy killing everybody.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading about that. Not reading it. You couldn't.
Not reading it.
I wouldn't.
Reading it.
I wouldn't read that book with an Alex Jones mask on, okay?
Now, you could use that as a threat, Bob. You start reading that, and then all of a sudden you have the funding to make your own Dubai in Western Virginia.
That's true. I mean,
the first paragraph, I think, would do it.
Yeah, okay. All right, y'all. All right. We gotta meet Darlene's challenge this evening, or the third hour of the program is going to be me reading a Bill O'Reilly book. I'll do it. I really will.
And it's gonna be the sex scene with a pimp named Robo.
I'm worried about you.
Oh my God.
How do you know that there's a sex scene with a pimp named Robo?
Just type in Bill O'Reilly novel into YouTube. And what's even crazier about it is they got him to read the book, an audio book. So he puts on his own, I wouldn't say his own blad voices or his pimp voices or his, but he does put his own little inflection on.
Can you hear the falafel scrubbing in the background?
No, but that would definitely be a... For the bonus iTunes edition, I guess. It just certainly is crazy, the fact that we have to continue in 2012 to deal with religious fundamentalists on all levels. And I think a lot of progressives are kidding themselves if you think they're going to go away anytime soon, because they have more money than God, literally, because God doesn't really...
Well, yeah, and Irish Dave noting, Dildo, he calls him Dildo O'Reilly. I like that. You guys are so good. Dildo O'Reilly is protected by the First and Second Amendment because guns, bitches. You people.
You know, people are so gullible. You know, the singer for Lynyrd Skynyrd came out for Mitt Romney.
Well, of course he did.
Yeah, that.
I mean, I'm surprised he's not touring with Hank Williams.
Yeah. I think it's absolutely It's absolutely crazy what's happening. But I did want to get to a mention of humor, and I just wanted to know if you checked out the Aqua Teen and Hunger Forces episode on Jet Chicken and Rocket Horse. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't. Oh, I must.
Oh, well.
I got to tell you, I don't know if it's a sign of increasing mental health or diminishing mental health, but I'm almost TV illiterate at this point. I used to enjoy it, but I've even moved away from the late night Aqua Teen Hunger Force. But please tell me it's online.
Yeah, yes, it's online. Just a little bit of background on it. So, Jet Chicken and Rocket Horse is the whole concept of this particular episode is this is Meatwad's graphic novel that he's trying to sell.
Of course, it is.
So. So it starts out, it shows you the graphic novel, and then all of a sudden you're let inside the world of Meatwad, his own illustrations, and the character of, and the whole premise of the whole episode is there's these two superheroes named Rocket Horse and Jet Chicken, and Meatwad has to go meet him at the comic convention, and come to find out that Jet Chicken is a bit demented, narcissist, egotistical type of celebrity, and he wants everything at a moment's notice. And but the funny thing is there's
do you know who I am? Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sort of like that. The funny thing is it's voiced by George Lowe from Space Ghost.
Oh, beautiful!
I tell you, Bob, when you start watching this, you won't stop laughing until the night is over. It's absolutely insane. And the genius part about it for anyone who hasn't seen the show is that Aqua Teen, they try to put a spin on a different particular concept every single episode. So this episode, they completely go into Meatwad's world through his own illustrations, depictions, and narration. And so that's the illustration that you see for the next 8 minutes. So you see all these, like, crayon markings, and it's all illustrated.
Yeah, because you just know that Meatwad is not a... No, he's probably got the artistic skills of, what, about a four-year-old?
Yeah, about that.
With dull crayons, not the ones that still have points on them?
Because
you know that little sharpener in the 64 box was never worth a damn after about two crayons because the little razor blade inside just got all gummed up with wax.
Right, right. And the story just goes completely sideways from there in a really, really good way.
And, of course, Sandra remembering some of the greatest hits from the Bill O'Reilly tapes, put down that pipe and pick up my pipe. Or some such shit as that from that O'Reilly prick, she says.
Now if you keep saying that, Bob, and if you threaten to say it in unison as the tape plays, oh my God,
he'll appear right in the room with the falafel.
Yeah, with the falafel overdubs. Yes.
Beetlejuice.
There you go.
That's one.
It is absolutely crazy what is happening in our country regarding religion and politics, and how we've just completely let them get to the front row as it is.
But remember this. I mean, if I was, you know, okay, here's a research project because you're very good at this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Go and find out who the manufacturer of the palm vein scanner is. And we need to put out a worldwide internet alert that stock is about to tank. Because that story's going to come out of, you know, Bug Tussle, Louisiana or wherever. And they're going to be talking about this, if they're not already, in every fundamentalist church throughout Jesus land. And I mean, that technology is going to, I mean, that business, it'll no longer be a going concern by winter.
I tell you who I want to see the commentary on it is Lindsay Williams. I bet you he has some enlightening things to say about the palm vein scanner.
Help me. Lindsay
Williams, he's one of the evangelical hucksters.
Oh, really? He's not on my radar. Shame on me.
No, I think you know his voice, but you may not know his name. I think he does something on TVN where they have, like, I forget the show. Maybe one of your listeners can clue us in on it, but it's sort of like mock CNN, so when you watch or when you watch it on the TV, do you have to take a double take before you say, "Oh, this is a religious broadcasting"? It's one of those. And apparently, you know, it's one of those the best hucks of all, the husband and wife team. And they I don't know if they still have it on the air, but they would give the news like how close we are to doomsday, and they would have like a screen in back of them that would be looking sort of newsroom broadcasty type. But like after a minute of it, you'd be like, if you really were in the world of reality, you would understand after like 30 seconds that you were watching not a broadcast, but like a agenda-driven evangelical infomercial for their ministry.
Got it. Well, it's on the radar now. Because, our cable system has, I think they've got TBN1, TBN2, all the way up to TBN8, the Ocho.
Right. But I did want to mention one other thing, and I think we should... We should talk about it, which is the AIC Act.
Yes, we should. Because I've actually got a tie-in for that, David. Kevin sent me this, and I actually saw the email not too long back myself. One of those, the Sierra Club's all the time sending out blast emails. And apparently they've got an email list that's hundreds of thousands strong. And this one, I mean, it's a legitimate story. And it's disgusting. It's sickening. It's about a highway called the Coalfields Expressway. It's literally a highway through nowhere to nowhere. It's a four-lane highway to get you through southern Appalachia a little quicker than you otherwise could. All right? So they put out this blast email that says, "Coal mining companies in Appalachia want to use your tax dollars to help finance new mountaintop removal mines." And that's not a joke. It's the truth. They've worked out a sneaky plan to use $2 billion of federal funds to build the Coalfields Expressway through rural Southwest Virginia. Not Southwest Virginia, but Southwest Virginia. Coal companies will use mountaintop removal mining to flatten the area and make way for the road while they keep the profits from the coal they extract. And I've seen this happen in southern West Virginia as well. We've got consolidated high schools that sit on toxic mountaintop removal sites where they said, "Well, we'll give you the mountain and shit. I mean, you can build the school there. We'll do it for you, and we'll use the school building money for it, and we'll take out the coal and we'll sell that too, and won't it be cool and jobs?" Right?
Yeah.
So this blast email goes out about this, and I have no problem with this blast email, but the question is, why can the Sierra Club not put out a blast email about the only bill ever introduced in the Congress that would end mountaintop removal? The AIC Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 5959. Why can't they get out there and give that a little nudge with their hundreds of thousands of email addresses?
Well, you know, Bob, I think we just answered the question for ourselves. Maybe what we need to do is take initiative to get Sierra Club to get off their ass by hitting them up on Twitter, just flooding their whole responding to them through their I assume it's like Sierra Club or something at Sierra Club or something along those lines, and whatever their Twitter handle is. And then hitting them up and saying,
the Twitter handle is Beyond Coal.
Beyond Coal.
You know,
that's
just
their Twitter handle?
Yeah, Beyond Coal.
Beyond Coal. And this is a specific department organization for
Yeah, that's a campaign. That's the okay. Official Sierra Club campaign. And it's actually the campaign that they have to end coal-fired power plants. But that's the problem. You could end every coal-fired power plant in America tomorrow, and homes in West Virginia and Southwest Virginia and Eastern Kentucky and Northeastern Tennessee would still be shaking from the blasting because as we discussed on the program a couple of weeks ago, the export market for mountaintop removal coal is growing and growing and growing and growing. And if Sailor Chick is listening, she knows about these things because periodically she sends me photographs of coal ships that are loading up on the East Coast and going to God knows where. I suspect The only thing slowing the export market for mountaintop removal coal is lack of shipping capacity. Because they fill one boat up as quick as it comes in, if, unless I'm mistaken, and send it out, and another one's waiting to fill.
Hmm. So I guess the question is Sierra Club, are they serious about mountaintop removal, or in your eyes, is this something that's completely, like, almost completely just like in the back, the complete back row of things?
I have no answer for that. I know we've asked them to support the AIC campaign, and we've gotten not a sausage. Okay? They have said, to be fair, they have said that they support the AIC Act, but they have done nothing to advance it. There are key members of the House that they could go to and say, listen, we're serious. We want you on this. And those Congress people would sign on.
That has not
happened.
Maybe the next step here is to go to look through their whole, we look through their whole department and we find someone who is, a so-called go-getter.
Well, just remember, and this is a fact.
Yeah.
What was it, a year ago, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? I don't remember. Michael Bloomberg gave to the Sierra Club $50 million. And he gave it to the Beyond Coal campaign. And it was said to be expressly for the purposes of shutting down coal-fired electricity in America. And the Sierra Club reads that in such a way as to say that that means that they can't use any of that money to actually end mountaintop removal.
You know, Bob, I'm getting a bad visual of I'm seeing Prince Harry partying with the Sierra Club in Vegas. I hope that's not true, though.
Now, that's a vision, not an actual... No, okay.
Yeah, it's not actual, but, you know, the shame of it all, the fact that Prince Harry is having a good time in Vegas.
Well, good for Harry, you know. I mean, you've got enough money to choke God, so what are you going to do with it?
Go to
Vegas, walk up to the high rollers roulette table and say, I'd like to place £3 million on 17 black. No! 14 red! No, oh, damn it!
I showed my bum on TMZ!
Right, exactly.
So do you suggest that we contact a...
Well, I don't think it could hurt. I mean, I'm not being mean about this. I just want a direct answer. Does the Sierra Club want to end mountaintop removal? And if they do, why are they not supporting the one dadgum bill that's ever been introduced in the Congress that would do so?
So other than yourself and other than your Coal River Mountain Wind and the AIC Act and so forth, those organizations, do you know of anyone who has tried to reach out to the Sierra Club and their...
I know that individuals are. I know that Larry, who was instrumental in getting Representative Barbara Lee to sign onto the AIC Act, I know that he has contacted the Sierra Club. I know that from Scott's letter from Sweden last night, I know that Scott has contacted the Sierra Club on Twitter. The hashtag and the address for reaching them is Beyond Coal.
In your mind, have there been programs now that the Sierra Club does that has helped spread the word? Maybe not particular about your issue, but coal and mountaintop.
Oh no! Like I said, they're forever putting out stuff like this. I mean, they're offended about the Coalfields Expressway because it is a dodge and a boondoggle that would rip off the American people to the tune of a couple of $1 billion to finance mountaintop removals through Southwest Virginia. And my God, I mean, one of the counties there, Wise County, Virginia. You can look it up on Google Earth, for instance, and 45% of the land, of the surface area of that county is just gone, David. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, they work against mountaintop removal, and the question is, if you are truly against mountaintop removal, why are you not supporting the bill that would end it?
It's definitely a good question. I think we all need to... You know how I suggested with Sam Cedar, maybe this is the next area of attack where we concentrate our efforts and try to get an answer for you, and at least some headway and at least some action in some sort of way in the coming weeks rather than in the coming years.
Well, the AIC Act is supported by virtually every grassroots organization working on the issue. And the question is, if that's the case, then why isn't the Sierra Club putting its money where its mouth is? Because we got this bill on literally pennies. Mm-hmm. Okay? We spent less money getting this bill to fruition than probably has been spent on any other piece of legislation regarding mountaintop removal ever. It was nothing but grit and guts and sweat and determination on the part of a few organizations and a handful of people. So why not really, really make a difference and maybe get this bill passed?
Well, you know, Bob, I think we opened the door here tonight for everyone to contact Beyond Coal Sierra Club, and whether through email or a phone.
Yeah, and listen. Let me be clear about something, David.
Yeah.
Don't say Bob Kincaid said to ask why.
No.
Because then it'll look like it's an orchestrated thing. It needs to be a matter of, hey, I've heard about the AIC Act. Why aren't you guys financially supporting it? Don't you want to end mountaintop removal?
Right. It needs to be along those lines. And I don't know. I think if an organization like that gets enough responses and enough feedback regarding this issue.
Oh, listen, if a bunch of people write in and say, you know, I'm done with you until you financially support the AIC Act, yeah, they'll pay attention. Sure they will. Because it's not like the AIC campaign takes millions of dollars. The AIC campaign could go on. It's almost running on the same principles the horn is running on. You know, a shoestring. Not even a shoestring. The last frayed thread of a shoestring.
Right.
I mean, we could the horn. Well, same applies. But no, the AIC campaign could probably do even more work than it's done with a simple commitment to sustain the campaign there in D.C. For 3 years. And, you know, we're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just a question that needs to be answered. If you really want to end it, why aren't you financially supporting the effort that will? Oh, and by the way, email has rolled in from Jack.
Yeah.
The woman's name is Roxella, and Jack Van Impey is the guy you're talking about.
Oh,
and
Jack Van Impey.
Oh, yeah, and I know Jack Van Impey, yeah.
Well, there's another guy who has a broadcast, I believe, on I'm not sure what radio market. It's called the Lindsay Williams Hour or something like that, and I think he has a similar type of a vibe to it, and he actually has a theory on the Well, who doesn't when you go this far down the evangelical road? He has a theory on the United Nations and all that crap.
Oh, yeah, Agenda 21? Sure. I mean, they're losing their mind over Agenda 21.
Yeah.
I got a story here just this evening. It's not a religious story, except for, you know, the guy's probably a fundy in the first place. There's a judge in Texas. Of course he's in Texas. He says that he has a moral obligation or a legal obligation to prepare Lubbock County, Texas for an Obama-led United Nations invasion of Lubbock County, Texas, because he's director of emergency management.
Yeah, he better get on that and get Chuck Norris.
Get Chuck
Norris involved.
Maybe Kirk Cameron?
Ted Nugent.
Patricia Heaton. Alex Jones.
Here you go. I mean, everybody on this campaign.
But yeah, get the whole staff of the I Got Nothing Institute busy on this one, would you?
Yeah, we definitely need to do that. And one last thing before I go. If you've never contributed to the Head On Radio Network, please do so.
This is a lovely opportunity insofar as your money doubles tonight. Anything that, you know, you give 10, Darlene's going to turn it into 20, up to 100 bucks.
And you get instant horn karma, guaranteed. Instant horn karma.
Yeah, without the disturbing parcel of me sending you a sweaty handkerchief, because you know there's a lot of forehead rubbing that goes on back here. You know, sometimes the air conditioning isn't so good.
You probably want to mention the email and where they can send their.
Absolutely, the button is at headonradionetwork.com. You can also just do a direct PayPal to bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's what the PayPal address is tied to. And if you click on the tabs there, personal and gift, none of your contribution will go into transfer fees with PayPal. Now, isn't that cool? And, of course, the snail mail address is The Horn, Head On Radio Network, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Bravo, PMB 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801.
I think that about covers it. And just one last thing, I'll send you the link to the Aqua Teen Hunger Force episode. And by the way, Bob, they've changed their name once again. Now it's the Aqua Teen something whatever.
Really, something whatever?
Yes, that's what comes up in the title credits.
I gotta love that. By the way, just a little bit of reinforcement coming from Texas Betsy in the chat room, Dave. She says, "I've seen Bob in D.C. on a hot day. Let's not be handing out his hankies."
All right, that's good advice, and I think we should leave it on that.
I think we better.
All right, Bob, as always, I love talking to you.
All right, take care, David. Bye now.
Bye.
And I appreciate David sort of goading me into making sure that you have all the information you need. You can go to acheact.org, acheact.org, and learn everything you could possibly need to know about the Ache Act and why it is the only thing that stands a chance of ending mountaintop removal in Appalachia, and we would appreciate it if you did so. I'm happy to announce that Lady Cab Driver is in the chat room and is recovering from her, no kidding, brain surgery. She says, I'm moving slow but feeling better every day. I can actually dress myself every day a little bit better, Tracy. Every day a little bit better. We've been thinking of you. We truly have. A quick email coming in from Bermuda.
I just love this.
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid and the Horn family. Please, it's not Mr. Kincaid, it's Bob. You guys are so polite. Could you please tell me what is happening to America? I'm an international listener from Bermuda. Please, no jokes about Romney and his taxes or lack thereof. Okay, we'll only comment on your shorts. No. I'm a diehard liberal to my backbone and cannot believe the ignorance coming from the GOP. Abortion rights, voter suppression, Medicare, and any other for discussion. Many Bermudians, to my surprise, are very tuned into y'all's politics. They need to be tuned into the Horn. But it's almost comical, but serious. Thank God Almighty we do not have politicians telling us women what to do with our bodies. Abortion's between you, your partner, and God. Many have flown aboard to the abroad to the great USA for abortions. Now not a problem here. See a psychiatrist, make your appointment, case closed. The reason why some choose to go abroad is because it's a trip and time to go shopping. A little about myself. 49 years old, married 21 years, 2 children, job, and make $70,000 and not even a high school diploma. Healthcare, always had it. Would not be able to live without it. There's so much more I'd like to discuss, but we'll have to at a later date. Busy listening to the program. Remember, Bob, we're a British colony, so some of my spelling may be a bit different from yours. Don't want you to think that I'm a teabagger. And I don't. I hope to hear from Juanita, Jim, Cossack, David, Tracy, Sandra, and Cassie. Sorry if I've missed anybody. Please accept my apologies. Sincerely, Bermuda Sand, otherwise known as Donna. Donna, thank you. I'm just tickled to get this note in the middle of the show. Can I tell you what's happening to America? Can any of us here in conversation radio tell you what's happening to America? In many ways, the Horn is an ongoing attempt to do that. Because we can't say definitively, you know, it's not like you can go and get a diagnosis. You know, America, you've got a disease. But that's what it is. America is diseased. The essential disease that America suffers from is fundamentalist religion. It drives the entire political platform of the Republican Party. And the Republican Party is hell-bent on destroying what is left of this country. I mean, Bermuda Sand, you heard the palm vein scanner story. Don't think that that's because that's an isolated report from Louisiana Stan that the same would not obtain if it had been announced in Alabama or Georgia or Tennessee or Kansas or Idaho or Pennsylvania or Virginia or Kentucky or Missouri or Iowa. I mean, look, just consider the geography of the states that I've just rattled off. We're not just talking about the Confederacy. We're talking about a disease that has spread and metastasized all over this country, where faith is of more value than actual knowledge. So if there's one simple way to say what's happening to America in answer to your question, I guess that's it. But I'm not at all satisfied that that's a real answer. So all I can say is we're all of us awfully glad to know you're listening. And if you want to jump into the chat room, you're more than welcome to do so. We'd love to hear from you. And email anytime, and we will expand this dialogue as you see fit. Okie dokie. Thank you very much for the note. Let's go back to the phones before I get myself caught in a filibuster. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, this is a voice that you haven't had a call from for a few years.
Well, my goodness gracious, Dave, how are you?
Like you recall, yes. Well, this is the Dave on the west northwest coast here, California. I'm in Arcata, Humboldt County.
Right.
And I have much missed hearing your thoughts and conversations on so much, but I got blocked out electronically. I couldn't listen, and I couldn't I still can't get to your chat room, but I'm happy that I'm again able to hear you. And now
we're thrilled to know you can, all of us.
Great. Well, I have just been any number of things over the years that I would have loved to have had your thoughts on. One of the things that much has concerned me, and I just sent you a copy of a letter I sent to an editor. I don't know if it got through to you. I have a world of problems.
Did you send it to bobkincaid@gmail.com?
I sent it, I think, to Bob Kincaid at Head On Radio Network.
Then it won't get to me because I don't have that address.
Okay, well, it is.
Yeah, bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Well, all right, because one of the things I've been very active with almost since over the last year or more has been this Occupy movement.
Right.
Because I really felt that was a hope that the people might learn to stand up to the greedy big corporate special interest that takes so much and wants so much.
Well, they don't want so much, Dave. I mean, if you haven't been able to listen a while, you might not realize it, but we've reached a conclusion here, and the conclusion, and it became almost instantaneously a slogan, is that they want it all.
Yeah, they do. They do, and it never will be enough. I recall back when I was still a teenager in the Army, I got assigned to Ethiopia for a couple of years. The emperor then was the richest man in the world, I understand, a few billion dollars in Swiss bank accounts. And the average adult working Ethiopian male earned $20 a year. The Haile Selassie group was wondering if they couldn't find a way to tax a little more. So I guess that's Republicanism in its extreme. But anyway, I'd wondered, because we hit with a boom. I was mostly active with the Occupy chapter that we formed on Humboldt State University, and it was, I think, one of the very first, maybe the first, universities to form a chapter of Occupy. And within a month, we had meetings that were flooding over the 300-person rooms, and people were wanting very much to get involved. And then over the year, they diminished, and I wanted to try to analyze with you, with others that might think, what is it, why did it get stopped? You know, I think there was...
Well, I know it's still going rather forcefully, unless it's changed recently, it's still going rather forcefully in Oakland. Because, well, Oakland is Oakland. Why did it slow down? I think it went into
it went into hibernation to a certain extent. But I also think that there were deliberate infiltrate, and I don't mean to sound all paranoid. Paranoia is the unreasonable fear that people are out to get you. Emphasis on the word unreasonable.
Yeah.
There were successful, overt and successful attempts to infiltrate Occupy.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the first groups to jump in and see an opportunity to do that was, of course, the Ron Paul bunch. And so once they got them talking about free silver and auditing the Fed and all of that stuff, that all that Ayn Rand garbage, well, a lot of Occupy was co-opted.
Yeah, well, we definitely got the feeling, some of us, that we were being infiltrated by some who had a purpose other than making the Occupy work. They wanted to make it a much less pleasant.
Well, and of course, as Chris Hedges noted, there were those who came into it from a position of wanting to do forms of violence, which of course are never never acceptable. And then, of course, the other thing that happened is the way the for-profit media treated it. The for-profit media didn't want to treat Occupy as a legitimate form of protest or a legitimate inquiry into corporate rapine and pillage.
No, that was a definite effort to...
No, they wanted to portray people on drugs. I mean, look at the way the right wing talked about. Well, do you know how many rapes were committed at Occupy, but the Obama-controlled liberal media won't report on the Occupy rapists? Of course, in the present scenario, one must, of course, inquire as to whether or not the people complaining about the Occupy rapists, just what kind of rapes those were. Because now we know that there's different kinds of rape in the Republican world, and we need to get clear on that, Dave.
You're still able to listen to those kind of channels. I would have already turned the channel by then.
No, I see references to it, and I have a couple of folks who write things like that to me. I'm like, God bless America, please.
Well, I guess my number one issue, incidentally, our Occupy group here in Humboldt County, we're a pretty progressive area, largely as a result of the university. And
right.
Is that... let me get back to that. But we had the hope that, you know, that we'd be able to have an impact. And in some ways, we did. So we made a resolution in three of our chapters right up in here, within 10 miles of where I live, that we wanted to see an end to electronic voting, that we all wanted to see verifiable paper records.
Yeah, marked by a human being holding a pen or pencil. Yes.
Yes, and that it could be counted and recounted if need be, and not simply told.
Not simply sent back into the machine and right.
It'll put the same thing.
Well, I forget what state it was in, but didn't Brad Friedman recently have a report that the optical scan, which is, you know, the video game voting machines are just horrendous. That the, you know, the touch screens. But the optical scans were thought to be somewhat more reliable, but Brad had a report in the last week or so making mention of the fact that testing of the optical scan machines used in a recent election, they couldn't generate the same result on the same ballot three times in a row.
Well, I know Brad, and I think he's been trying to do the right thing. I think it's worse than he's ever thought it was. That is to say, I think these machines can produce a paper that says, thank you for voting Democratic or Socialist or whatever, and at the same time cast 150 votes for the Republican. And
I think Brad's proven that.
Yeah.
Well, especially with the touchscreen machines.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one of the early successes that Brad had was talking about putting out the story of Clint Curtis.
Yes.
Who actually wrote the software that flipped votes in Florida before the 2000 election.
Yeah, and when he was so shocked to learn what he had done, he thought he was helping the good guy Republicans investigate the wrongdoings of the liberal Democrats. And when he learned that indeed the Republicans fully planned to use that machine to win the elections that they wanted to win. So the question that I came up with was, how many votes can a voting machine flip if a voting machine can flip votes?
And I'd say that's a far more important question than the previous inquiry about woodchucks.
Yeah, because of the answer that I keep coming up with is it can flip as many votes as it needs to or wants to. But usually, if they come up short, they read, oh, wait, we got another box or two out here with 10,000.
Yeah, welcome to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, sure.
Yeah. And then they found, and I guess Brad Spokes and Bev Harris, that there were little precincts in the country that had only 200, 250 registered voters that delivered 5 and 6.
Oh, yeah, there was that one county in Ohio that was that way.
Yeah, well, it happened a few places. And then and they said, well, surely that justifies a recount. And the answer was, well, what are you supposed to recount? There's nothing to be recounted. Have faith, you know, like. These 250 people cast 6,000 votes for Bush. So anyway, that's one of
the... And see, the usefulness of that comes in situations, and it's where the usefulness of that, Dave, comes into play where you've got a 51-49 break or a 52-48 break, because that's where vote flipping really, really shines. Because if it's obvious, if the polling in advance of the election says that, say, candidate A has a 15-point lead on candidate B, it's almost impossible if they are legitimate statistics, if they're done, you know, if the mathematics is solid, it's almost impossible to make that up on election day so that it would be obvious what happened. But in a 52-48, 51-49 situation, well, you know, people just changed their minds. People didn't go out to vote. You know, the polls closed while people were standing in line. You know, there's any number of explanations for something like that, right?
Well, you know, I understood from back in my days when you and Guy and Mark and all used to say that West Virginia was not Humboldt and that there are indeed people that vote very stupidly. And because I've always raised the question, how in a democracy do people...
Which, of course, we understand this is not. This is not a democracy, but
well,
continue.
Well, sure, you know, how would we so vote to our detriment? How do we vote for, say, a president and a vice president who do absolutely nothing for the people and do only things to benefit this fraction of 1%?
Well, can I respond to that by reference to ancient history, Dave?
Sure.
There was this guy who would stand on the street corners in Athens, and he would inquire as to what the true meaning of love is. And he would inquire as to what the real nature of the gods were. And after a while, a few too many well-filled purses got a little too well skewered by this gadfly. And the members of that democracy, which really was a democracy, got together and held a vote and said, you know what we need to do with him? Kill him. And so by an unrigged democratic vote of all the people who were allowed to vote, the decision was made to imprison Socrates and hand him a cup of poison and compel him to drink it on the charge of having corrupted the youth. That is how people can vote against their own best interests. It's not new. And there is an element, I'm not saying you're engaging in it, but there is an element of elitism in questions like that, because what we are essentially saying is, don't you working people understand that the Republicans are going to rip you off? And their response is, well, I reckon they may, but you know what? I'm still going to heaven if I vote for him. And so the inquiry has a tendency to be elitist, and so does my answer. But my answer there is more accurate than simply saying that they've been hoodooed. They simply value things differently than rational people do. And that's elitist too, but it is also factual because, for instance, is there any doubt in anyone's mind that the lady at the beginning of the program in that audio, Mrs. Saunier, is there any doubt in anybody's mind who she's going to vote for in November for president? If she believes that her child placing his hand on a biometric scanner is going to imprint the child with the mark of the beast and that Jesus will throw him into an everlasting lake of fire made for the devil and his angels. If she believes that, how hard is it to imagine that she probably believes that the President of the United States is an anti-colonialist, secret Muslim Kenyan with a deep-seated hatred of white people? Her values are so far different from your values, Dave, and from my values, that she may as well not be from a different country, but from a different planet.
I find there's an awful lot of people that think that way, that they want to still recall what they learned in the second grade, that America is this good people, and we go about the country spreading love and freedom and goodness.
Yeah, I want to believe that, too, because I was born in 1963, and we were on our way to the moon.
Yeah, well, and I think also, if you listen to the right channel, if you listen to Fox, they'll go on telling you that what you learned in the second grade is essentially very accurate. They don't realize how profitable these war ventures are to the Halliburtons and Lockheed Martins and Bechtels and all.
And that's the thing. That's the nature of the hustle, the dodge. What folks who are voting because they want to make sure that they get into heaven are actually voting for is for Halliburton and Bechtel and Lockheed Martin, because they're the ones who are setting the policy, and they hire people who know how to manipulate the lizard brains of the people who want to make sure they go to heaven.
Well, Bob, there's one thing I wanted to share with you, and particularly for your listeners now, because one of the things that I know is that small programs like yours, you struggle, you run on fumes. And recently, I had been able to persuade my Unitarian Social Action, and we've got an awfully good group of them here in Humboldt, that we needed to support some of these little progressive struggling shows to answer the Rush Limbaugh's and Fox's as best we were able, and had been so long out of contact, I didn't even. So we had what is now Stephanie. Well, not Stephanie. I'll think of one of them. But we just sent us. We sent out a $500 check to one of you small, struggling little groups. That means a lot to programs of your size.
Oh, yes, it does. And if they feel like doing it again, we would be more than happy to be a recipient of their largesse.
I will definitely have you at the top of the list. It was radio or not that we sent the...
Sure, Nicole Sandler.
Yeah, but they were definitely needing it at the time. So.
No, I don't know of any of these groups that don't, and I wish there was some organizational systems genius out there who could figure out a way to, like, bring all of us strugglers together and make sure that everybody meets their needs and their bills and all of that and is able to eat and have health care. But it hasn't happened so far.
Well, I bring it up with your listeners, because if there are those who are active in the Unitarians, there are groups like that. That's the piece.
Well, and absolutely. And let me put the other side of this. I mean, do you have an environmental justice committee there?
No, in effect, I don't think
Because one of the things I've been thinking that I would love to do, because I have a tremendous degree of regard for the Unitarian Universalist Church, mm-hmm. I'd like to have a sit down with the national body. And tell them about the AIC Act, you know, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act.
Yes.
And the real chance we have to end mountaintop removal, and get them in on it and get their financial support on it, and make, because, you know, as the previous conversation noted, we're having a devil of a time just getting enough to keep the thing going. And, you know, waiting for one of these big greens to come along and pony up a check seems to be a very long wait indeed. but people who understand the necessity for justice and for some degree of mercy, moreover, in a place like Appalachia, might be willing to might understand the urgency and be willing to help.
Yeah, there's certainly need in the areas that
I mean, we're never going to get a nickel out of the Southern Baptist Convention. But the Unitarians, I have yet to meet a Unitarian who was not very receptive to the work.
Well, you know, we, the Unitarians and the Baha'is, some other really good groups of people that do seem to genuinely care, the needs, usually we have, when they get to us, it is the person that is without a home and hungry and whatnot.
Right, and you're meeting immediate needs.
Right, and we don't really feel we have the ability to address what is being done to this country and why there's so much poor by these.
And that's why I'm saying, I mean, you're talking about what you're hearing within your local congregation. That's why I'm saying we need to have a conversation with the national governing body.
I would really love to see us redirect our canon to this top neocon group of thieving goons that have stolen our country. And see if we can't somehow expose that and turn it around. And it is going to be no small task, but simply trying to provide food for the hungry and shelter for those that are now living under a park bench is expanding, and our resources are limited and limited more. And so if we don't redirect our energies to say we've got to go at the cause and not the result.
Indeed. Well, it's awfully good to hear from you, Dave, and I hope it won't be so long between calls next time, all right?
No, I've been able to bring you up. Normally, the same tech folks that live in your voting machines live in our computers if they don't like what we have to say. I'm happy that you're able to still be there, even if I couldn't get to you. So much, Bob. Thank you so much.
Take care. Take care, Dave. Good to hear from you.
All right.
Bye now. 13 minutes before the hour. That was Dave calling from Northern California, an old friend of the program. I'm awfully glad to hear from him. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? Ah, somebody.
An old friend of the program. I'm awfully glad to hear from him.
Okay, I hear me.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, that's definitely me. Hello?
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 Yes.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Tracy.
I was like, oh, wait, is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
I guess maybe my brain surgery is affecting my brain a little bit more than I thought.
No, I don't think so. I think you were, I don't know, maybe I put you to sleep.
No, I had obviously been out of the loop for the last couple of weeks, and I'm kind of glad, because why is it the first thing, I guess yesterday was the first time I've opened my computer and everything.
Bad day to do it.
And then I see this fool talking about if a woman is raped, if she gets pregnant, that she wasn't raped because the hormones released. Now, during sex can only be released if she's excited and wants to have the sex. Am I right in saying that? Or
No, you pretty much picked up the gist of it, so I think the brain surgery worked, Tracy.
Oh, my God. Well, first, before I start in my rant, I just want to thank everybody from the Horn family for praying for me, and even those who don't believe in God for keeping me in their thoughts and whatever God or whoever they believe in.
I sent a whole lot of good thoughts your way, Tracy.
And I felt them all, especially when I woke up and saw the star in my head. I'm like, oh, really? My doctor, well, the staples, my doctor said it was going to be a small incision. Well, no, it's gone from the top of my head to the bottom of my neck. But the good news is that they had a plastic surgeon cut done due to closing. And when my doctor took my staples out, I really have no scar, which is pretty awesome. But
it's awesome what they can do with a staple gun and a little bit of that medical grade super glue.
I'm telling you, I know they use Gorilla Glue, and of course, when I said Gorilla Glue, all my brothers were like, well, they use the Gorilla Glue because you're black. I'm like, really?
Jeez. Don't. No, you're fine. You're going to be just fine, Tracy. You're going to be okay. I'm pretty well confirmed in it now. I mean, I'm not going to tell you you don't have to go back for your follow-ups or anything, but no, I'm pretty sure you're going to be all right.
But, you know, like I said, I just want to thank everybody because, apparently I extubated myself. I pulled my breathing tube out, and they had to resuscitate me. When I finally came to, I was asking for my mom, my girlfriend, and my son. And the person that I saw was a friend of a friend who made sure they took really good care of me. And the first thing I said, and I don't remember saying that, but she said, my sister said, the first thing I said when I came to was, "You're not my mother, you're too white."
Tracy. We are not responsible for what happens on the drugs. It's understood.
I am not I was under heavy sedation, so you cannot hold me responsible. I mean, you're talking about a woman that was under Lodit and morphine, and it did nothing.
No. I saw that. I saw your comment in the chat room earlier, Tracy, about not liking morphine. Well, join the club. I'm a don't bring the morphine guy too. I mean, it's not. There's a lot of people that are allergic to it.
And I do have an allergy, and as a matter of, the only thing it did for me was I just had crazy dreams, but the best, because my range of motion was really limited. So my mom is in one room, and my girlfriend's in another room, and I couldn't get out of bed. And the only thing I could think of was the scene from The Fly, "Help me."
Okay, so we know that the sense of humor area of Tracy's brain is in good shape. Good.
In the background on television, there was a commercial playing over and over again about opiate dependency. I'm like, this is my life.
I kind of hate some of that because the fact of the matter is they have their uses.
They do.
And, I mean, for instance, it is no comparison with what you went through, but when I was in the hospital a while back with my rotten gut, the little Republican that lives just above, just below my liver, my gallbladder. They gave me morphine, and I was like, "This is yucky. All it's doing is giving me a headache and making me angry.
Yeah.
Will you please bring me hydrocodone, oxycodone? Don't care."
I have that too. I have oxy. I have Vicodin. I have morphine, and it's just hilarious because. The one thing, like I said, on the morphine, I was having crazy dreams.
Oh yeah, if you can muster up the gumption to sit down and write some of that stuff down. I mean, you can have, I don't know, if you build the time machine, you could have the number one selling album of 1972.
Yeah, because the one dream that I remember having, somehow I had made it up into the hallway in my apartment, and I'm throwing up. My mother and my girlfriend are standing over me, going, "Is this one of the reasons why we're supposed to call the doctor?" And then one of them says, "Well, go get the list." Now, my mother is a trained medical professional, okay?
Yeah.
She's an RN. And I'm like, I say, "Yo, ladies, women lying here in vomit, can we call 911? Because even when..."
And just to be clear for the Horn family, this is an opium dream, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I said, "Just... can we call 911? Because when the paramedics get here, they're going to wonder why you left the girl lying in her vomit and didn't at least clean her up. I mean, come on now."
Right.
What?
No, I don't. That stuff generates weird dreams.
I don't like it. My primary care physician was actually pissed when he saw how much morphine the pain management doctor in the hospital gave me. I stopped taking it because it really wasn't doing anything for me. That I could, like, he told me no more Vicodin and no more morphine, because he did not like what they prescribed. Because he's like for the few days after I got to the hospital, it was fine. But for how many pills? I have enough pills for like.
Don't say that on the radio, okay? Because. Somebody be coming through your door with a crowbar.
That's true too.
That stuff makes people
crazy. I threw them away. I just, so all those people that were thinking about coming to my house, they're gone. because I just didn't. But what I, my main thing is I thank God that I have, you know, every time I turn on the news on those rare occasions, because my head hurts more so than that ever. And when I hear about the health care debate and Obamacare, I just thank God because, see, you know, I have a disability, so I have Medicare. But I'm also, and I didn't, I was also, I'm also eligible for Medi-Cal or Medicaid because of how much I get for Medicare. But I never applied for Medi-Cal because my doctor bills were, you know, $50 at the most, you know, for my copay. And that was it. I can handle that. But when my surgery alone was supposed to be $150,000.
You said $150,000?
Just for my, that's just for my surgeon. That wasn't for the operating room, the anesthesia.
Man, good work if you can get it, right?
Right. So he only billed Medicare $4,500, and I had the only thing I had to come up with was $1,200. And then I got to thinking, I'm like, wait a minute. If he's going to cost, if my surgery alone is going to cost me $145,000, because he wrote up over $100,000 of that for, you know, charitable, just, you know, contribution. I'm like, oof. But I started thinking about, okay, I'm going to be in the hospital for at least 4 days. They've got this emergency, I mean, the surgery, the OR, all those little people that run around in the OR and all that. And I, being on Medicare, I still have to come up with 20% of that. So I went ahead and applied for Medi-Cal, which I got. But I was just thinking, every time I think about these idiots ranting and raving about keep the government out of my health care, motherfuckers, do you even have health care?
Right, and let's see, you know, the thing that Paul Ryan says a lot, Tracy, is we don't want to create a culture of dependency on government. See, that's what that Obama's done. He's created an army of people who are dependent on government, and that's why they're going to vote for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, you know what? I look at it as a blessing and a privilege that I live in a country where, or let me rephrase that. I live in a state that I have Medicaid available to me and who is participating in the Health Care Act.
Yeah, see, here in West Virginia, Tracy, the so-called Democratic politicians for whom this should be a, no pun intended, given the subject, a no-brainer, they haven't decided yet if the working poor in West Virginia should receive the expanded Medicaid coverage via the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
They have, they're just not sure yet.
They're just not sure yet because, you know, my mom lives in North Carolina. And because of the fact that she, you know, out there, because I, you know, I was telling her that because she just had a an endoscopy and it cost her all this money. I'm like, wait a minute. That's preventive care, and it should have cost you nothing. And then I'm like, oh, wait.
Wrong state.
You live in North Carolina. And she just looked at me.
Yeah, like, North Carolina, Stan.
Yes. And I said, unless your governor is a Obama supporter, you would, nobody in your state will benefit for the Affordable Health Care Plan Act.
No.
And she just looked at me like, oh, really?
Is this before or after the surgery that you said this?
This was after the surgery because she's here, you know, she's taking care of me through my recovery. She's in Tim's extra room. And so, no, I fixed up the room.
Man, Tracy, Tim wants that room.
You know, he really wants that room.
Well, let's talk about important things. I mean, have you gotten back? Have you had a shrimp taco or any good food truck foods?
Well, actually, let's see. No, I did go out last Thursday. Oh, there's this place, subplace. I think you guys have them on the East Coast. They're just now coming out here called Jersey Mike's.
No, I haven't heard of that. is this a subplace?
Yeah, it's a subplace. And the fact of the matter, you know, like Subway and Quiznos, all the meat is cut and sitting in the container.
Yeah.
Whereas Jersey Mike's, they cut it as you order your sandwich.
Yeah, there used to be a chain called Blimpy.
Blimpy's. Yeah, we had them out here for a minute, but I never went there.
Yeah, they did the same thing. They'd sit there and slice the meat, yeah.
I had what they call a big kahuna, and it was a Philly cheesesteak with extra cheese, mushrooms, peppers, and jalapenos.
My brain would love that.
Yeah, your stomach, no, not so much, but your brain. And I actually, yesterday, I cooked for the first time, which was, it was funny because I'm standing up cooking. I made tacos. And I'm like, I got through the whole thing. My mom had to cut up the tomatoes and lettuce and stuff. But basically, I'm on the mend. I mean,
I guess the ultimate question, Tracy, is, did they fix what they went in there to fix?
Not only did they fix it. Remember how I was always saying that I was having pain on my left side? No more, it's gone. The only pain that I feel now is how the swelling of my head. I was, like I said, when I saw the staples in my head, I called my brothers and said, you know what, we're going to go find my doctor because we got to have a talk. Because he told me that it wasn't going to hurt that bad and that it was going to be a little bitty incision. And then I saw the staples. I'll send you guys a picture of it. It's frightening. I look, a friend of mine said...
See, you're now wait, Tracy. You're just spoiled. It could have been a zipper.
Yeah, well, you know, the people who have this surgery, they do call them zipper heads because my brother... The one that said that because I'm black, they use Gorilla Glue on my head. So be careful, you know, and just don't walk too close to the microwave.
Ah, you got a great family.
Ah, you know what? You let me tell you, because I was estranged from my family until this, you know, I hadn't spoken to my mother, really anybody, for almost a year. And, you know, when stuff like this happens, you can't be stupid anymore. And the reason, it was had nothing to do with my family having issues with me. It was just me being a stubborn bitch like I can be. I'm really good at that. But it was only through the grace of God. You know, I wound up going to Atlanta with a family reunion so I could spend time with my siblings before my surgery and so my girlfriend could meet my mom and everybody before the surgery. But you know what? Every single one of my siblings that's out here for my surgery. My sister from Portland, my brother from Atlanta, my brother from Sacramento, my brother from San Francisco. Every single one of them, regardless of how, of anything, they love their sister, even though I'm an asshole at times. Because I'm really good at being an asshole. But the bottom line is, it's all about the love, and it's all about forgiveness, and it's all about taking responsibility for your bullshit, for your own bullshit, and stop blaming others for the stupidness that goes on in your life. You know, because we as people, as human beings, we're pretty stupid. Because look, we got just the Republican Party and the Tea Party. That right there is just pure stupidity. You know. But we, even as enlightened folks, we get stupid too, and we hold on to grudges, and we just hold on to the petty shit, not realizing how important friends and families are. And then you wake up one morning and you're surrounded by a house full of cats, and your house is on the episode of Hoarder. What?
Yeah, no, I support everything you just said. I absolutely
you know,
do.
Yeah, because it's like I when you know, just the fact that my mom and I are in under the same roof because I mean, you know, she was kind of freaked out about the fact that I have a girlfriend and.
Well, you know, I didn't want to be pushy or anything, but you know, is everybody okay with that?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Beautiful.
They would, you know what they said. Because here's this little, my girlfriend's this little Jewish girl, you know, and she's never been around black people. The only black person she ever knew in her life was her maid. So here she is.
Our worlds are the worlds into which we are born.
Yeah, and so here she is. Well, the first meeting of the family was the true ghetto faction of the family. And then when I say ghetto, I mean...
Tracy!
What?
No.
No, I mean, it's, no, there's a degree of reality at work here that, it's great that, you know, and the first person she met was the real ghetto faction. You know, your family's in factions.
Factions. There's the ghetto faction, and then there's my faction, and it's the educated, you know, because I had to have her meet those people, that them first, so she wouldn't. So I said, now, these are the people that you're going to meet when you go to Atlanta. They're like me, educated and, you know, the noble Negroes. What?
Man. No, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. I mean, okay, so, So, what was it? You worked it out that way, so you know, honey, it gets better.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how I did it. I'm like, baby, trust me. And this woman, you know, she grew up in Brentwood with the nannies and this and that and that. So she grew up with money, and the only, like I said, the only black person she ever really knew was her maid. And then as she grew up, got older, she had an issue. She was robbed at gunpoint by three black men, which made her, I mean, basically, when she first met me, I was that nigga bitch, because we clashed head. I've known her for 5 years. We worked together. But as she got to know me, she's like, wait a minute. See, this is what it takes about getting to know people and putting aside what you think and what you've heard about people.
Right. When you actually let reality intrude into your world, sure, it's a beautiful thing.
And we got to hang out and started going to places. And she's like, wow. I'm like, yes. All black people are not what you see on TV, except for my ghetto part of the family. They've been, there's a couple.
Please tell me you've not recruited them to listen to the horn so that I...
No, they wouldn't even know how to work the computer to even find the horn, so we don't have to worry about that.
Okay, but I just didn't want to answer angry emails.
No, you don't have to worry about angry emails. They wouldn't even know how to find a computer unless it was stolen. But anyway, I digress.
Man, No, you're fine. You're fine. You're okay.
But the thing is, like I said, this woman had went from calling me a nigga bitch to calling me the love of her life. Because
that's a journey.
You know, that's because she took the time to get to know me. And that is what it takes. If people took the time to get to know all these people that you're so afraid of, because, you know, Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern and all those idiots told you to be afraid of them. It's like, you know, I didn't grow up in the South, but I know you did. And I know from what I read about people who grew up in the South, little kids played fine together. It wasn't until Mammy and Pappy told them not to play with the little colored kids.
Oh, sure. And, I mean, we're experiencing a little... And there doesn't even have to be the intermix of race in a situation. We here, Agnes and I, are about two and a half hour drive from our grandchildren.
Yeah.
And the oldest of our three grandchildren has just started school this year. She started kindergarten.
Oh.
And Granny, otherwise known as Ging Ging.
Yeah, my nieces and my son calls my grandmother Meemaw.
Yeah, these first few days of school, it's almost sad, Tracy, because to see this beautiful shining little light of our lives, and she's going off into the school system, and you know they're going to work really hard to tamp that down.
Yeah,
and of course, in little rural counties, you know, there's a pecking order. You know, I'm a so and so, and you're a so and so, and what's your last name? Oh, you don't matter.
And
it's heartrending, but it's very much a reality. I got to share something with you, Tracy. Ron and Raleigh just wrote in about Jersey Mike's. and see, this is the kind of useful information that we pass amongst ourselves.
Okay.
He says, we have Jersey Mike's here in Raleigh. However, the way the franchises work, the owners get to choose their own produce suppliers, so you have to choose your store wisely. Ron says, I found a store that bought his Italian sausage from New Jersey. And he closes, and this is a delightfully southern way of saying something. Ron closes saying, make the jackrabbit slap the bear.
So, yeah, just so apparently you found a Jersey Mike's that gets good stuff, but yes. It ain't guaranteed.
No, and living in California, we have most of our stores out here buy locally because, hey, I live in California, and when my mother moved to the South, you know, she was born and raised out here. She said she should have turned back running when she went to the store for the first time and saw something called salted ham.
Huh? Salted ham?
Salted ham on a shelf.
Maybe I'm a little lost.
Because apparently salted ham was something, you know, you had to salt your meat back in the day because there was no refrigeration.
Right. I mean, what I know is country ham.
Probably. And of course,
it's just, it's ain't nothing but salt.
And
it's yummy.
I said ham is already by principle salty. So you're telling me you're adding more salt to the ham so the ham can be on a shelf in a package? Oh my God. I don't get it. I'm spoiled. I live in California and we have real produce and all the stuff that are supposed to. Oh, by the way, I have lost 32 pounds.
And a girl.
And there's a zero after the two.
Hot damn.
Because it started off at 236. Now there's a zero after the two. I'm like, holy. When I got on that scale, I'm like, wait, is that a zero? After the two, the people at Weight Watchers are like, why are you here? You have no sense. I have to admit, though, since I've been incredibly inactive, justifiably so, I've gained 4 pounds back, but I don't care. There's still a zero after the goddamn two. No, I did not lose. Tell Tim that I did not lose 320 pounds. I told him, didn't I say that I am not going to be on the episode of Porter's? I'm reading in the chat room. Fool, I lost 36 pounds. My God. If I weighed, look, I would be out of breath talking if I weighed over anything that had lost 320 pounds. I couldn't talk to you guys.
Yeah.
I'd be out of breath. It would be, I said I'm chunky. Nowhere ever did I say morbidly obese. Thank you, Tim, for making that correction. And you should bless. But like I said, I can't imagine with what I went through in another state where I couldn't get to the health care that I have in California. And that California does participate in the Affordable Health Care Act. Because if I was, you know, there's, you know, because these people are taken away in all these different states, you know, Arizona Stan and all these other states where they're trying, like you said, trying to decide whether or not they should allow their constituents to have access to health care. I'd be dead. Well, not dead, because this was never life-threatening, but I would be in horrific pain, because the thing is, the surgery in a way was elective, but it kept me from, because if I had gone any longer, I would have had degenerative stuff that could never have been healed, ever.
And see, at least there is the recognition on your part that something happened for you that doesn't. I mean, this is, how rare was what you were going through, Tracy?
As a matter of fact, I was born with this. I was born with this, but it didn't matter. But it manifested itself maybe in the last 20 years with the pain, with the depression, with the mini strokes. But see, the problem is, it's not as rare as it seems because, it matters.
Right, and that's the point. That's the point I was. That's the point.
People have it, then they know.
Right, and that's the point I was making.
Uh huh.
It is not so rare as to be 1 in 7 billion.
No.
It didn't just happen to Tracy.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's well,
It's inspiring to know that you recognize that.
And see, and here's the thing, and I have been suffering this with this for over 20 years in different forms, but I finally, and it's only by the grace of God, because I have one of my friends who I drive cab with, he was going to this, we were talking, I'm like, I was having shoulder and neck pain. He's like, well, you need to go to my doctor. And so I went to see him, and as soon as I told him what was wrong with me, he knew. He knew that I had a nerve issue, and he did an MRI on me, and then he realized that he couldn't do anything, so he sent me to one of the top neurosurgeons, not in the state, not in the city, but in the world, who has written papers on Chiari malformation. And it's because of him. And another thing that's only by the grace of God, it's because of what was happening with me, and since he's my particular condition, he doesn't typically take Medicare, but he saw what was going on with me and took my what insurance that I had and wrote off the rest as a donation. So when you people, you
and that's kind of where I was going, Tracy, because you are, I don't like fortunate. I don't like use lucky, fortunate, blessed,
whatever.
But you were in a state that extends, that is willing to extend healthcare, some healthcare help, to its working class.
Yes.
Now, consider that, and this is one of those arguments, you know, why is healthcare not a national issue? Why should some governor in Alabamistan be able to make sure that somebody who has the same thing you have
not get the treatment that
doesn't get the treatment that will make their lives meaningful?
Exactly.
Why does somebody in South Carolina have to suffer for the political ideology of some weirdo in the governor's office?
Exactly. Abso-freaking-lutely, and that's my point exactly.
And I mean, you know, all, what is it? Think globally, act locally. All politics is local. You know, those little bumper sticker things that we see out there, Tracy.
Bullshit.
No, it's true. It's true. But the thing is, the local brand of politics that a Romney and a Ryan would practice on a national level is one that leads to agony, illness, misery, and death.
Exactly.
And we need to understand that in terms that are that stark. Because you know what? If you're healthy enough to go to a teabagger rally and hold up your Gadsden flag with your "Don't Tread on Me," and you're healthy enough to march around with your sign that says, "If Brown can't do it, Browning can."
Right.
Okay? If you're healthy enough to do that, then you're probably not, then you're probably too healthy to be engaging in the essential discussion of what it means to be sick and direly in need of help, and have a government that says, well, the free market didn't take care of you, so that means you need to just suffer, because the free market conquers all, right?
Absolutely. And like I said,
yeah, I mean, I've got stuff I haven't gotten to on the program tonight. For instance, one of these right-wing religious talkers, a guy named Matt Barber, we've talked about him before, he's worried. Yeah, I'm worried about people who need essential health care. He's worried that if gay marriage is legalized, the next thing you know, we'll be having polygamy and incest, because the whole purpose is to undermine Jesus's traditional marriage.
Well, speaking of marriage, my girlfriend is here, and I have to go.
I understand.
Yeah, no, I don't need that, but I'm just saying to everybody, God bless you and keep you, you know, and I'm glad to be ahead of the game now, and I am going to have Thai food.
Well, I'm not, and I'm jealous.
But we still love you, though, Bob.
I still love you. We all do. Thank you for checking in, Tracy. It means a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Lady cab driver, Tracy, calling in post-surgery and doing what sounds to me like very well. Very well indeed. And continued good health to you, Tracy. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
Listen, isn't it interesting what they call elective surgery?
Yeah, no kidding. You know, because what Tracy had was the same thing as, you know, wanting your nose straightened out.
Yeah, sure. I know that, you know, I told you that I'm signed up to have cataract surgery, and they said if I don't have it done soon, you know, it'd be too late to have it, you know, and I could lose the sight in that eye. But it's still elective, and I still haven't been approved yet.
Wait, stop. I mean, I'm not being mean to you. Your cataract surgery is elective?
Yeah.
Even though if you don't have it, you'll be blinded by it?
I could be, yeah. I definitely would lose a lot of sight because it's so big. It's growing. But I'm not worried about it.
No. But I mean, just the dang.
But I'm saying, you know, with her, my gosh, I mean, you know, with Tracy, I mean, that's elective, you know.
Right.
But I just couldn't get over that. But anyway, but I had a good news today about my medication for the surgery.
Yes.
It was going to cost about $250. Well, I had different information from the drugstore the other day. I got a really neat girl, and she acted like she knew what she was talking about. And then today I called early today, and they did, and I had gotten some coupons, and she said, well, you have to bring them in, you know. And so finally I said, okay. So turns out that they won't accept the coupons because my insurance won't pay for the medication. So I called the surgery place, and she told me, the surgical nurse said that they would send me, on the one medication, they would send me samples to use. So that's cut out.
Well, thank heaven for small favors, but you never should have had to jump through all those hoops in the first place, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and then the other medication, they're changing it to one that my insurance is supposed to pay for. You know, because if you have formularies and...
Oh, right, and they will and they won't. And again,
right.
And again, my question, why is not this all simply standardized on a national level?
And then I have to, you know, if I had $2,500 extra, I could have...
Yeah, right, just lay it around.
I have glasses.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the way it goes, right? But what I wanted to tell you, I didn't sleep at all last night because I was being very naughty.
Oh, really?
Not at...
No. I want to hear what qualifies as naughty in Juanita world.
Well, you know, when you get as feeble as I am, you know, takes what you can get. But, I mean, that's not making any sense. But what happened was, I'm on Facebook now, and I had a... gotten this one girl was I grew up with. She's a little younger than me, I guess. Well, I call her girl, but anyway, I was really disappointed that she was saying, I like Romney, I like Paul Ryan, I like Fox News, you know, different things, you know, like so anyway, I got to looking and to see what the comments were, and she had like 15,000 replies, and I thought, oh my God. But I got to looking at a lot of them, and one of them said, hey, you know, I'm your liberal cousin. You know, a lot of liberals made comments, and I thought it was so great. So I started putting down, you know, I like this and I like that, and then I'd make a comment here and I'd make a comment there, and then I got to evangelizing my liberal Christianity and my liberal politics, and I just went on and on and
well,
on.
Well, now that you've gone off into Facebook, Juanita, you know there's a Head On Radio Network Facebook page where that you can like, right?
Yeah. Well, I haven't got there yet.
Well, whenever you get around to it, I mean, it's there for you. And, okay. A few of us folks like Benedict and Matt Osborne and, well, Tracy updated us to let us know that she was okay on our Facebook page. Head On Radio Network, just look for it and like it.
But I might get some of the things I said, I might get either hung up by my middle fingers or by my little toes.
Oh, we haven't had any burnings at the stake or anything lately, so I think you'll be okay.
I think the little toes might hurt. But anyhow, I really, and my son read quite a few of them, and he said they were very eloquent and
informative. Nice. Well, you are eloquent. There's no, that's the absolute truth.
Thank you. You are too.
No, mostly I just make dumb animal noises into the microphone, but you're very kind to say so just the same.
No, you're one of the most intelligent people I know of.
Well, thank you very kindly, Juanita. I don't feel very intelligent a lot of the time.
Well, I don't.
Most of the time I just feel like barking at the moon.
People used to tell me I was smart, and I said, I'm so smart, Wyatt, and I have a lot of money. Anyway, I enjoyed that, and I didn't sleep, and I felt really good, and I've slept a little bit today, but, you know.
Well, you know what, you raise an important point with that little quip a minute ago, Juanita. You know, if I'm so smart, why aren't I rich? That's something this country needs to stop doing, 10 years ago, and that is equating wealth with intelligence.
Right.
If wealth equaled intelligence, Willard Romney would not be Willard Romney. It doesn't take a lot of brains to get rich. It takes a lot of greed. It takes a lot of avarice.
Yeah.
It takes
yeah.
a single-minded determination that money is the most important thing in your world.
Yeah.
And I would say that's not a positive character trait. That's a character flaw.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later, if you're a Willard Romney, for instance, or a Bush, that inexorable drive for cash is going to lead you to do some really, really evil things to other people and not care about it. And that's why so many top executives of corporations are actually sociopaths, because they have no conscience and they don't care whom they stomp.
No, that's true. I'm glad if being rich would make me that way, I'd be rather not be rich. But anyway, I just some people are gonna get mad at me, but
oh, I don't think so.
People might agree with me. You don't know. I mean, there's a lot of weird people around here.
And true enough.
But anyway, I'm stating my case, and it felt really good.
Well, I wanted to, on a separate topic, since you are there in Florida and you're our Central Florida correspondent, Juanita, are people watching anxiously the weather maps at Hurricane Isaac?
Yeah, I was going to bring that. I thought I forgot about that. It's supposed, where it is now, it's going to hit Tampa on Friday, the day the convention starts. And they are lining up to cancel some things or go somewhere else. I don't know where.
Well, I know that they've cleared out a prison just for protesters. Yeah. But I also had a question. I think it was from Irish Dave earlier, and I kind of liked the question. He said, if you went to the Republican convention and you wore an I Like Ike t-shirt, Would that be considered bad form? What with Isaac bearing down on Tampa?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, because that's an old and respected Republican slogan.
It made me think about the hurricanes that we went through here in Central Florida. Where three of them went directly through here. It's like every month we had one, and then another one went 50 miles away. And we, you looked at the map, I still have the copy somewhere, it showed that all of the counties that had voted for Bush, went for Bush, that's where it hit.
Well, you know,
one of them hit.
If there's an almighty,
it didn't hit the others.
No, if there's an almighty, there are messages that keep being sent. For instance, the French Quarter of New Orleans was not as devastated as the Lower Ninth Ward, and you know the French Quarter is just full of drag queens. And then what was it down at Padre Island or Corpus Christi, Texas? That other what was that Rita that hit, and the only place that had power and phone was a gay bar.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
Well, you know it. I told my son, I said, now if I was God and I was gonna create a little irony, I'd have it hit them. The hurricane hit them as soon as they started, and they'd all be trapped in that building like people in New Orleans were trapped in the building.
And in the Superdome,
but, you know,
yeah.
I don't want it to come back on me because I.
No, but you're simply mentioning,
you know,
irony.
It would be poetic justice, wouldn't it?
I think it would be past poetic. It would be actual justice.
Yeah, but.
But remember, and because I know you're biblically schooled, Juanita. Remember the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. The right wingers like to say, see, God eliminated Sodom and Gomorrah because it was full of homosexuals, right?
And you know where I learned about that verse is from your show when you were talking to an atheist and he was talking about.
Yeah. And the fact
and
of the matter is,
posted,
it is the
posted that scripture on Facebook.
It is the inhospitability. It is the inhospitability, and it's mentioned in another book in the Old Testament. It's even referred to in the New Testament. It is the fact that they were inhospitable to strangers that caused.
Did you know that it is all through the Old Testament? I mean, it is through not just what Jesus did, but it is one of the worst sins that you can commit.
Well, and it's the same thing in Islam. You are not to be inhospitable to a stranger.
Right. And look at how
our
country is blaming the people that come over here to try to feed their children.
Right, exactly. You know, it reminded me of that old Carter family song. You know, you remember the Carter family, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mother Maybelle and yeah.
Yeah.
They've got that song, Hello Stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real simple. It's just, hello, stranger, you are a stranger, but you're a friend of mine.
Yeah.
You know, it runs, I think it's actually intuitive that we should be decent to people who need our hospitality.
Well, you know, also it was to please God also, the people who farmed in the Old Testament.
Yeah, and this being Wednesday.
A certain section of their field for the poor to come out and gather.
Right, and this being Wednesday, I think these kind of conversations are more than appropriate. I got to thinking about something the other day. I was reading some article about how right-wing evangelical fundamentalist ministers are all scared that Obama's going to make to take away our freedom of religion so that if we preach against the homos, then they'll put us in prison. And Juanita, my first inclination was to say, you know, you just shake your head and go, God, God, God. But my second inclination was to say, wait a minute. Their Savior wasn't publishing tracts that said, well, I'm afraid that Caesar's going to send me to the cross if I keep preaching. Of course, Jesus wasn't preaching against the homosexuals either.
He said his kingdom was not of this world, and I put that in a bunch of places on Facebook on those Republican things. And also, you know, see, Judas wanted him to take over the government, and he thought he would force his hand by betraying him that he would use his powers to take over the government. We're not, if you're a real Christian, you're not supposed to take over a government. You're supposed to pray for it. And it's all right to...
Well, right, and there, I mean, there were a couple other things that struck me. We're afraid that Obama's going to send us to prison. A couple other things
maybe
that struck me.
Maybe they need to go to prison.
Did St. Paul, I mean, they believe in him. I think he was psychotic. But did St. Paul shrink from prison? You know, we're told
he sang like a fool in prison.
Yeah, I mean, he sat down. Didn't he write Romans from prison?
Yeah, he wrote. He was chained to a guard when that happened. And he was he could have been freed, you know, one time when he was in prison. I kind of like Paul. I like a lot of his writings. I think a lot of it's misunderstood and
Well, and if you ever get around to reading that magnificent book, Forged, Bart Ehrman does a magnificent job. Professor Bart Ehrman, Dr. Bart Ehrman down at North Carolina University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He does a magnificent job of pointing out the things that really are Paul and really aren't Paul. Because there was a lot of just made-up, phony baloney doctrine that was advanced under Paul's name that's not him. But anyway, just to wind this up just a little bit, the other thing that I got to thinking about was, well, okay, you know what? Here's my offer for all of those pants-wetting, evangelical pastors who are afraid that that Kenyan Muslim with a deep-seated hatred for white people is going to put them in prison. Here's my offer. If they'll just be the Christians they're supposed to be and go to prison, then I will do what Jesus said to do, even though I'm not one, and I will visit them in prison.
You have the spirit, though, Bob.
But I can't be identified. I won't be a part of a religion that will not condemn Jack Van Impe and Kenneth Copeland and Joyce Myers.
Yeah, but they're not going to take that away from me. These people are evil. I've come to...
And they are
completely evil.
And see, that's the thing, Juanita. You'll say that. And I had an email from somebody. Gosh, I wish I could remember the name, but there's so many of them. I had an email from somebody a week or two ago saying, Bob, you said that no Christians out there will say that these people are not Christians. He said, well, here's a Christian who's saying it. And that's the thing. He was a Christian who was saying it. Here's Juanita, who's a Christian who's saying it. Where is the hierarchy and the superstructure of decent Christ following religions that will say Paul Ryan is not a Christian? Okay, Willard Romney is not a Christian.
What about the nuns? They're challenging him.
Well, they're challenging him and praying for him, but they're not saying the one thing that I think, Juanita, is most important. Those people are not Christians. They are not going to partake of the grace of Jesus Christ, and they are not going to sit with him in the kingdom. And that's what has to ultimately be said. That is the kind of thing that has got to be interjected into this dialogue. Because, I don't buy into virgin births, and you know that, and things like that. But there's some basic social teaching going on in the Gospels. And I understand that, and I endorse some of it. But I cannot be associated with anybody that will not say, and by, not anybody, but anybody, that will not say outright, straight up, straightforward, that Paul Ryan is not a follower of Christ.
I would say that.
Yeah, but I'm saying that no organized religion will dare say it.
No, but there are some liberal churches, that
right, but they say things like he misunderstands, or he is misquoting, or he is misapplying this or that. For instance, just to raise this in conversation, Sandra and I were having a back and forth on Twitter. Apparently, in the last couple of days or so, there's been a dialogue engendered about Paul Ryan's version of Catholicism.
Yeah.
Precisely because of these nuns and because of the U.S. Mm-hmm. Conference of Catholic mm-hmm. Bishops, who are saying that his understanding of Catholic social teaching is upside down, backwards, and sideways. Okay? Well, no, the answer to that is not to say that he doesn't. It's to say he is not a Christian. He is not a follower of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
He is a follower of Ayn Rand. That has to
be
said.
I put that in my little buzzer.
That has to be said very plainly. And yet, one of the people who's
the
out here.
Atheistic one.
Well, no, I wouldn't claim him as an atheist.
No, I said her.
Yeah, yeah. But I, no, she was just mean.
She's his hero.
She was just hateful. But to continue and finish out the thought, there is a sort, and you know what I mean by the word apology when I say there's been a Paul Ryan apology written. It's not Paul Ryan saying an apology in a religious sense is an explanation of or a defense of a given principle. Well, there's been an article written by a creep, and I mean he's a creep, named Deal Hudson. Okay. Now, this guy used to be a Baptist minister and was married a couple of times while he was a Baptist minister, and then he converted to Roman Catholicism, all right? And after he converted to Roman Catholicism, he married a woman, and while he was married to her, he became a professor at Fordham University,
mm-hmm.
all right? And at Fordham University, he preyed upon a young girl who had been in and out of foster homes, got her, she was 18 years old, got her liquored up, and had sex with her.
Mm-hmm.
And got caught. And it's just a sordid, disgusting story. And yet, lo and behold, here is this guy who is still treated as having credibility to talk about whether or not Paul Ryan understands Catholic doctrine and dogma.
Yeah,
and that's and you know that it's one of those moments where you look at it, and the first thing that pops into your mind, Juanita, is ye generation of vipers.
Yeah. The only people that Jesus criticized, and he really criticized them, was the religious leaders of his day, and the lawyers and whoever was in charge. Boy, he called them some names.
And I think that generation of vipers
but
is my personal favorite.
But yet he wept over them.
Yeah.
That he would gather them together as a hen gather her chicks.
Exactly.
And they would not. And he told them that they were of their father the devil. And he told them that the harlots and the publicans would go into the kingdom of heaven before they would.
Exactly. So why can't
they were mad?
So why is the so-called church not emulating their Savior and pointing to Paul Ryan
because
and say you
not.
Are of your father the devil?
Because they're not of. They are of the father the devil because they lie.
But no, I mean we need people like Jim Wallace. These so-called liberal Christians. To take that next brave step and say, my Savior will not recognize you on the day of judgment. Okay? That has to be said. Now, some have said, oh, Bob, that'd start a religious war. But if there's to be any credibility to any branch of Christianity, it has got to draw a very bright line between what is Christian and what is not Christian. And what is not Christian is Paul Ryan. And I'm not talking about Mormonism when I say what is not Christian is Willard Romney. I don't give a damn about his Mormon religion, Juanita.
I know.
You understand what I mean?
Something about the Mormons. I have friends who are Mormons who are sweet and kind and everything. But when somebody like a Romney and Beck, who are all, and what's the other guy? They're all Mormons and they lie and everything. The guy that got Bush elected. Carl Rove, they'll lie just like it's Satan. They'll lie and steal and destroy just to have their way. The people that believe all their stuff, they have no use for them. They don't care about them. They just are using them.
Indeed. I do have to run because I want to make sure we get all the calls in tonight. But I appreciate everything you've said and everything you've offered.
Okay.
And I hope I hope you understand. I'm not disputing with you.
No.
I'm just
we're having a discussion. That's what I like.
Exactly. Exactly.
And not get all bent out of shape.
Well,
about it
I mean,
we might not agree on everything.
Well, I'm not bent out of shape, and I don't think you
and
are
I'm
either.
I'm not either. I like it.
Before we do,
and
go,
it's challenging to me too. You know.
When are you now? Assuming that they approve it, when are you scheduled for your surgery?
The 4th of September.
Okay. Well, make sure that you keep us in the loop. All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Juanita. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay. I love you, and God bless in every way.
Well, I can tell you that we and the whole Horn family just loves you to pieces.
And little Ferg and all.
Thanks, Juanita.
Big tall Ferg.
Yeah. Ain't no little Ferg anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. See you, Juanita. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
From Central Florida, that's Juanita. And you know what? I'll say this. I could probably... Well, I mean, I'll always have issues. But I can at least understand the Christianity that Juanita is talking about. Because I can't recognize as Christianity... I mean, good God, Mike Huckabee held up James Robison as a reason why rape victims should be forced to have their babies? Really? A vicious, hate-mongering huckster who has no more to do with the message, the saving message of Christ Jesus than a hog does with a Sunday suit? No, I can't operate on that. I can't operate on that wavelength. I can't even receive it, and I'm kind of glad because it probably makes things melt. Andy writing in, he says, Bob, to answer your question, why don't we have national health care across the nation that's standardized? Because we have cowards at the federal level too craven to stand up for the working class. It will hurt their corporatist bona fides. He adds, why wouldn't the politicians want a more affordable single-payer system that costs us less than half the current 18% GDP impact and puts everybody in a big pool so we're all covered? It would make us a healthier, more efficient nation, costing the individual citizen far less. We don't provide government-sponsored health care to all because the politicians don't get the backsheesh from the for-profit insurance industry. Pretty clear. Jack in Shreveport says, these two folks came to mind who might be willing to say what Ryan is about. John Fugelsang and Bobby Kennedy. They came right off the top of my head, and I couldn't guarantee what they might say, but I think they might be decent starting points. And I understand that, Jack. I'm talking about the institutional heads of institutional organized religions. You know, the Roman Catholic Church could get started simply by, after the fact, excommunicating Hitler. Remember, in Catholic theology, Hitler is forgiven and sitting at the right hand of God! Maybe he's working off a little in purgatory, but he'll get there. Might take a couple of million years, but Jesus will forgive him. He was baptized, after all. And he was never separated from Mother Church, ever. And the guy who became John the 23rd, the short-lived pope that he was, got in deep doo-doo, to quote George H.W. Bush, with the rest of the church by suggesting that maybe that would be a good idea. So, there's that. Hey, listen, let me just put this out there. It's 12 minutes before the hour. We have Darlene's $100 challenge on the table this evening, and no one has met any portion of it thus far, unless I've missed it while I've been watching the email. No one's met any portion of that. And frankly, if we're gonna end August in the good, it needs to happen. And a lot of you give, and a lot of you have given. If you've already, don't. But if you haven't and you can, it's the difference between September and no September on the Horn. Like I told Kate, I'll go till the lights go out, but it makes it more likely that the lights will go out when we don't end a month in the good. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Grant from Portland.
Hey, Grant, what's up?
I just seem to be batting 1,000 this week. Seem to be calling in all the time.
Oh, that's okay. You're more than welcome. Need a little... are you far, far away from your phone microphone or something? Because you're very faint.
How about this?
Dramatically better.
Okay. Let's try that one.
Okay, I like that much better.
I have to tell you, this week's been very inspiring in sort of conversations. And I think one of the reasons I get in so late on the calls is that I get inspired along the way. And I only get so much a place in queue before the call comes up. But I wanted to touch upon something that gentleman from Humboldt, California.
Dave, yeah.
Dave, yeah. About the Occupy movement. I've been watching this for a while. You know, I've been there for moral support here in Portland. And, you know, when they need a bicycle generator, we try to arrange that. And sort of then, you know, on the fringe at a wide orbit, just sort of as a sympathizer and somebody who wants to help. But it's interesting what you hear coming out of some of the general meetings, not just here but elsewhere, you know, in general, and some of the pronouncements that Occupy's dead and all this stuff, right? You know, there's a temptation with these types of things. Look back to SDS, how it got started, how it got subverted, how it ended. You know, there's just this, you know, natural reflex in the populace to try to save the organism, you know, and it just come up, you know. But what I see going on a lot with Occupy is there's a part of me that really wants the adults to take over, and I don't mean the co-opted adults. I mean the seasoned veterans of reform. This kind of thing, I guess it's just endemic with these kinds of reflexes, but, you know, you get the hosers, the posers, and the Robespierre wannabes just coming out of the woodwork. And they start steering this thing all over the place. And it just happens. And that's even outside the deliberate provocateur element or molds or anything else that they may send at you because you're not a sanctioned movement like PDAC is, you know.
Or a corporately funded movement grant that can shape and devise the path that the co-opted group will travel.
Exactly. And you know, it's the thing is these other types of elements may not be on the payroll, but, you know, eventually they might as well be in some ways. But I see this happen every so often, and I would just say to the people who were there at the beginning, you know, who really saw this is a reform push, to just keep that inside you, don't be discouraged, let the hosers and the posers have their little megaphone moment. It'll pass, because to them, you know, they use revolution like a fashion statement.
Well, they're okay, there's our toaster moment for the night.
Okay.
They use revolution like a fashion statement.
Like a fucking fashion statement. Remember, these kids are inculcated off of Madison Avenue. Okay? And they're going to project a lot and this kind of thing. But, yeah, there's just this element. And I see it even in rural as well as urban, you know, sort of bought liberal setters.
Oh, listen, you get no fight out of me, Grant, over any of what you just said.
Okay? And it's like, it's, you know, once you understand how to identify it, it's fairly rank, and you just want to take about 5 steps back and distance yourself, you know, just from the smell of it. But it's endemic, because it's a part of the population, it's part of the psychology we've all grown up with and everything else. At least I can speak for the Gen Xers and beyond, you know. But, I would say don't be discouraged. You know, the guys at the very beginning of this thing, don't be discouraged, because this is, in my opinion, still a reform reflex. This is an organism attempting to save its life against a parasite, a gnarly parasite, it's sucking its marrow out, you know. That's how I see it. And I think that they should just keep going. You know, once these guys kind of get tired, they can't quite get the high salutations and such, and they move on to their little, you know, ghetto issue, little wedge issue off in the corner somewhere, then it's kind of like, you know, be as constant as the rising sun. Come back into the movement and say, okay, now that that's done, we have a reform agenda. And we're starting local. You know, if you think the federal is beyond hope, just do local if you have to. Because it's all of the millions of micro steps in all these locations that can make a momentum shift in the future. You know, it may not surface for 20 years, just depending on how things go down. And we still don't know how things are really going to go down. But it all counts. And I think that local action and local reform is the best you can possibly do, because that's the base also of the corrupt elements. And you begin to weaken their food supply. I mean, the right wing talks about starving the beast. Well, this is kind of like starving the beast, but with a totally different intent or dynamic or heart to it.
Well, it's a totally polar opposite understanding of the definition of beast. The right wing talks about starving the beast, Grant, and they mean destroying any concept of representative government that may yet exist in this tottering country. Whereas when you say starve the beast, you're talking about systemic.
I'm talking about the beast that is eating our children. How about that?
Yeah, well, the corporate. I mean, can we say corporate America?
Yeah, you betcha. They are eating our kids, mind, body, and soul. And, you know, it's like they've got, you know what they got planned for us? Orphanages, prisons, or being army or prison guard. That's their vision of our future for us. Ain't that big of them. You know, and we had a better vision. And then I've said it before. We, the average people, can concoct a vision of the future and do it. And it'll be far superior to anything these little cloistered sociopaths can even imagine.
Man, you are swinging for the fences at fat pitches over the middle of the plate.
But it's true.
Cloistered. Say that again. Cloistered
sociopaths.
Cloistered sociopaths. Man. You've got a clarity of vision going for you tonight, Grant.
It's called rum and juice.
Yep.
Hey, it works every time, man.
Absolutely, you know, I may have to try that sometime.
Yeah. Well, you know, you really tickled me with the hog in the suit. I got to tell you something. There's something about the South I really love, and it's that kind of thing that I really love about.
Well, Ron knocked me down with make a jackrabbit slap a bear. See, there's a reason we need the South in the Union. We just have to teach them how to behave once in a while. I hate to say it, but I got to. We're out of time, Grant.
All right. Well, did you like the story I sent?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did.
McCarthy says it all.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk again.
Okay. Take care, Grant. Thanks for your goodwill. Thanks for your work. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And so that brings us to the end of Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and I mean, we've had a good one, I think. And I hope you feel the same way. Thanks to everybody who chipped in with your ideas, your thoughts, your conversation. It's what makes this the very, very unique medium that it is. I'm hoping Darlene will leave her challenge on the table for tomorrow, and we will maybe take care of it then. Thanks, everybody. Thank you kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks, Agnes, for taking care of show posts. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox, WhiteRoseSociety.org. No, that's Ben Birch. I'm tired. Thanks to John Fox for all that he does to make the horn go, and thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. We had a considerable discussion about the AIC Act this evening, and, you know, you will be the reason the AIC Act passes, and you will be able to say, I stepped up. And I made a difference. I helped to end Appalachia's agony. You can do that. AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
She's another man's sensation at 25.